Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, January 4th, 2015. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, give it a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher. Tell everybody why you like it. It's tied to my self-esteem. If you you can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lamberth, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 100 of the Mundane Festival, and we've only just begun. I'm very happy that almost been doing this almost 2 years, and the amazing guests that I've had on the show, and I'm not gonna stop. And I want to thank all the awesome guests that I've had on the show. You made this something that I never thought it would be when I used my income tax return and got this microphone that I'm talking into instead of sneakers. And there's nothing wrong with getting sneakers for your income tax return. I just, you know, I would, because I kind of want to get some sneakers myself right now. And I'm kind of fighting with myself. It's like an internal struggle of do I want to perpetuate stereotypes and have some really cool sneakers, or do I want to get something more productive, or can I do both? I'll let you know what I decide whenever that happens. You'll probably get a tweet from me. I got the sneakers. No, but this is episode 100. And, yeah, thank you for listening. If you're a fan of this show, you're appreciated. The tens of you that listen to me, spew stuff into this microphone and broadcast it all over the world, dare I say. So my special guest on episode 100 is Fonte Coleman from The Foreign Exchange, and formerly of Little Brother. Little Brother, the one of the seminal rap groups in of the 21st century. Super talented group, Ninth Wonder, Fonte, Big Pooh. The catalog is pretty fucking astounding, if I must say so myself. And then Fonte and Nicolay form the Foreign Exchange, and the collective that they have with those awesome artists and what they do, their live shows, their music. They've built up an awesome catalog for 10 plus years. And you've heard me mention Fonte a bunch of times on the show and a lot of other of my guests have talked about how much they enjoy the stuff that he's done. So it's great to get him on, and we'll bring you to the conversation with him in a few. I just want to do a couple of things. I want to give you some plugs and some other stuff. I'm going to be at Union Hall on January 13th in Brooklyn, New York at 7:30 p.m. I'll be at the Laughing Devil on January 30th. The Laughing Devil's in Long Island City. That's going to be at 8 and 10. I'm hosting the 8 o'clock and 10 p.m. shows. 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. shows. I'm hosting it. Be there. It'll be a good time. Always a good lineup. I'm going to be doing a show. I don't know if this is private or not, but if it is, I'll tell you about it. I'm going to be in Westminster, Maryland on January 24th. With Stavros Halkias. He'll be opening. I'll be headlining. It'll be fun for the people who get to see it. I don't know. It might be like the gig I did with the homie Jamel Johnson. So I'm not 100% sure what that's going to be. But if it's open to the public, I'll let you know. And there'll probably be some more dates interspersed in January, but I'll give you one big show that I'm excited about. Another one, on February 13th, I will be, I believe the name of this festival is called the 10 by 10 Festival, and it's in Pittsfield, Massachusetts at 8 o'clock PM. And Pittsfield is in the Berkshires. I think it's going to be me and, Tom Attila Lewis from the producer of the My Dumb Friends podcast with Sean Donnelly and Dan St. Germain. I think he's going to be there too opening. That should be a really great time. I'm excited to do that show. I heard that there's outlet malls up there, so look out. What do you call those shirts? Slightly altered jeans and shirts. And you get them for a reasonable price. I avoided the outlets while I was in Myrtle Beach. I just didn't want to binge too much. And so I avoided them this time because I didn't want to spend too much money while I was down there. But all right. So I wanted to shout out Christine and Jeff Emanuel at the Comedy Cabana. I want to thank them and the amazing staff for having me down there, the hospitality. They treated me really well down there, and I had a great time. I worked with Mike Burton and Basil and Cooter Douglas. Those are the comics that I worked with. Mike Burton and Basil headlined two different sets of days with me. And they headlined, I featured, and Cooter Douglas emceed. It was just a great time all around. There was one show where I had to work and prove myself as a comic, and it was while I was up there for that 25-30 minutes made me see, it's like, is this what I want? Is this what you wanted, Chris? But but I got through it, you know, a little dinged up, but I made it through and had some really great shows down there, and it was fun. The crowds were really cool. So finished out that week down there, and I wanted to thank again Sean Joyce, who runs the Underground Comedy at the Big Hunt, and he runs a bunch of other shows in the DC area. I wanted to shout him out. Shout out to, so I did that show on Friday after I got back in town, in the DC, and it was like, I didn't realize it was an open mic. So it was, but it was an open mic that was just packed with audience members, packed with civilians. And in New York, that does not happen. Like that doesn't happen in New York. That's a show in New York. That's one of the biggest shows in the city when you have something like that, you know? So it was great. And I worked on some new material and I got some good feedback from it. It was fun. It's one of those times where it's like, do you want to just lay up and do stuff that you know works? Or do you want to just kind of put yourself out there and, see if you're worth your metal, you know? So it was, I didn't want to drop the ball on with an opportunity like that. So that was awesome. And then after that, I went over to, the Arlington Draft House. Randolph Terrence, Andy Klein, Tim Miller run this really great show at the, Draft House in the Green Room, which is the bar area of that venue. And I had an awesome time. Every time I'm there, I have fun. The crowds are really good. That's another show, packed room with real audience members. Just a great time to work on your material and see where you stand. So that was awesome. And I'll give you a quick movie review. I saw Selma, went there, cause it was only playing in four cities. And I looked at my AMC Theaters app and I was like, Selma's playing at the Hoffman Center. I was like, oh shit, I gotta go see it. So I went with my uncle, went down there, and man, this movie's a fucking masterpiece. Ava DuVernay, I hope I'm saying her name right, it was a director, and this movie, it's pretty epic, man. It might be as epic as Malcolm X. Only time will tell, but just off the rip, off the first viewing, it was just like, man, and it didn't make MLK look like, it made him human. And because it made him human, the shit that he did was elevated to another level. He wasn't like this godly person that, you know, you see, you know, they had some scenes that you were just like, damn, like they went there. And it was so good. The racism was magnificent. There was no CGI to the racism in this movie. And I've never seen black people look so good in a major motion picture. Bradford Young was a cinematographer on this film, and oh my God, even from the camera setups and just how they looked aesthetically, just very pleasing, good looking black people in the movie. And it was just from top to bottom, just from the technical aspects to the acting. David Oyelowo, I guess is his name, who played MLK. And I was talking to Andy Klein about this. He saw it and he was just saying how he didn't fall into the rote rhythm that mostly everybody does when they portray MLK, just like, have a dream and like he's revving up in it, like you're revving up a motorcycle engine. He didn't do that. And it's also an amazing turn for him because he was one of the evil people in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And he was hating those apes that were stand-ins for black people. And he went to leading actual black people to getting their voter rights. So, I mean, if he doesn't get an Oscar nomination, then what the fuck? he was terrific. Carmen Ehogo? She actually played Coretta Scott King twice. So that was her second time. She played it in the HBO film with her actual husband, Jeffrey Wright, who to me at the time had one of the best portrayals of MLK. The homie Damian Lemon will say Paul Winfield. But yeah, it was really, really good. Go see it. I mean, it's worth it. You know, you kind of get to the point where you get tired of seeing these movies where black people get beat up and all this shit and everything like that. But it is, it's a really good movie. But this civil rights thing, it's becoming, the civil rights movie is becoming a genre, just like Holocaust movies, just like shit, just like science fiction. It's becoming a genre of its own. And it's not one that I'm how do I want to say it? It's not one that I'm like really super excited, but for me, you hear me say on the show a lot, it would just be nice to see black people going through complicated black characters in complicated situations in present day. Even though there's relevancy right now with the stuff that you have with Ferguson and Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, and the countless other black men that are getting that are being murdered by the cops, and there's relevancy there, obviously, but I'd still like to see those things happen. Like a movie like Beyond the Lights, even though it was a love story, you had these people dealing with issues in present day, all that good stuff. I just hope that there's more. I hope Ava DuVernay gets to do more films. I hope she has carte blanche to do more stuff. And so I hope we get more from her. And she's done some good flicks, Middle of Nowhere, and some others. Bradford Young, if you want to see his work, he shot Pariah, and which was also really good, and Restless City, which at the time when I saw that movie, one of my buddies recommended that movie to me, and it's very depressing. And at the time it was on Netflix. I'm not sure if it's still on Netflix, but it's about this African immigrant that moves to New York City and he's trying to be a musician. It's fucking depressing, but it looks really good. And I didn't realize that until I looked at his IMDb page or his Wikipedia. So, and he did Ain't Them Body Saints, also a really good movie. That's with Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck. All right, so that was my movie recommendation, movie review on Selma. And we're going to get to Fonte. Like I said, I think I said on my way back from Myrtle Beach, stopped in Raleigh to visit with Fonte. And he was a hell of a guest, and evidence of that is on this episode. Been a fan of this guy's work for a long, long time, ever since I picked up the listening, and I tried not to stand out too much and be that Chris Farley character on SNL. So like I didn't want to be like, remember when you guys, you and Knife Wonder and Big Pooh made the minstrel show? Do you guys remember that? You remember what you did? Wow, man. You know, I didn't want to be that guy, but I'm kind of a person, if I have someone on the show, I like their work. I like what they do. I like them. And if I compliment them, I'm that type of person that I want to give people their flowers while they can still smell them. You've heard me use that term on the show before. And Fonte is no different. You know, when you have a musician like this and you're a performer, I'm also a performer. So I listen to his music to get ready for shows. Like he a bunch of his tunes are in my iPod and I'm listening to them to get ready to when I go do stand up, you know? So it was really awesome. We had I nerded out a little bit, and I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry for it. You can hear me fight through nerding out, and then I just say fuck it. So he was a real good sport, and I don't think I made him feel too uncomfortable about it. And I also say that this is probably the blackest episode so far of this show, because we stopped the interview to eat chicken. And the chicken was really amazing. And I asked Fonte if he had any hot sauce. He looked at me like I was, like I was stupid. And he was like, yeah. And he had Texas Pete. So Texas Pete is probably, this podcast is sponsored by Texas Pete and wherever the Chinese carryout place he got the food from. So it was a great time. And I'll say the last 20 minutes, stay tuned for a really cool and interesting revelation from Fonte. So this is me talking to the great Fonte of the Foreign Exchange and formerly of Little Brother. Enjoy it, folks. So we were watching Malcolm X before we came.
Black
up.
Classic, Negro must see Negro TV.
Yeah, and some of those when it's on, it was showing on Centric, and when they do those, part of me just it takes you out of it because they show commercials.
Very much so.
But with this movie, it's different because I was still drawn in, and the more I see it, it's just like he should have won the Oscar for that.
Yeah, he was robbed for that one, man. I mean, I think, you know, Training Day, that was kind of like a consolation prize.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, that was like the Susan Lucci fucking, you know, Emmy, I guess. Like, you know, you should have been one, but we're going to give you one for this shit. So, yeah, man. Yeah, Malcolm X was, I remember when I was in seventh grade, I wanted to try to get my class to see it. And so, mm-hmm. like, I think I wrote a letter to the principal. And I was like, we need to see Malcolm X. It's an important movie. Yeah. And we almost did it. But, I think some parents got mad or something. And
was it like a, what was the makeup of your class? Was this something that you had to take to the school board?
Well, we didn't have to take it to the school board. I took it to like the principal. Okay. Like I wanted to try and get a class trip to go see Malcolm X.
Yeah.
And ultimately it got shut down, but you know, for whatever reasons, but yeah, I that was one of the first historical movies I can remember growing up that I could really put context to. Like I got it.
Right.
Know? And
right.
You know, cuz another one of my favorite movies, I don't know if you fuck with Soldier Story. Like come I have on, it on man. DVD.
Of course.
I mean, come on, like that shit is, you know,
it's a classic.
I used to watch that movie all the time. You know, my uncle had it on tape. And so I come home, you know, like third grade, and just come home and I would just watch it all the time just cuz it was so many black people in the movie. Like, people just don't understand now, you know, you got fucking reality TV and Loving Hip Hop and shit, so you just see niggas everywhere now. But there was once a time, in entertainment where black people just weren't seen on a big level like that. And so movies like, you know, Soldier Story, even The Wiz, which now I think is a horrible film, and it's a horror movie at its core. But I was just so happy to see some black people, you know what
I
mean?
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, Soldier Story is one of those movies, and so I always loved watching as a kid, but it wasn't until I got older that I really got it and saw, like, the themes that they were, you know, just black-on-black, self-hate, all that shit.
Right.
So yeah, Malcolm X is one of those first movies that I really, a historical movie that I got as a kid, you know, at the time. And yeah, man, he Denzel killed that shit.
It's just one of those things, like, it's like that, like I was telling you earlier, you know, like every, almost like every black kid or every kid in every boy, every red-blooded American boy, you think you're going to play basketball or football.
Mm-hmm.
And when that reality set in and I wasn't going to be Bo Jackson, it was like, I remember seeing, like, I think Glory and the scene where he's getting, Denzel's getting
the
single tear. And just, I'm watching it with my dad and my dad's crying. Like, he's moved by it. And like, And it's just like, I want to be able to do that. Fuck these touchdowns.
Right.
I want to be able to, like, move somebody like a hard, stoic guy, manly like my dad.
Yeah.
And that's partly why I'm sitting in here with you today, because of that journey and, like, seeing Denzel and Spike do what they did together. Mm. And it's just like, well, I want to do that. And that was, like, that, like, led me on my path. And it was frustrating when you see a guy like that gives it his all, and it's not recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess now, like, in present day, what is that, like 20-some-odd years later?
Yeah, maybe? That was, Malcolm X was 92.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's 23. Yeah.
And you see that with, like, I mean, I was telling you earlier, that was something that kind of conditioned me to say, okay, just because I like this thing that this artist put out doesn't mean it's going to get that critical acclaim like I feel like it should get.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's like fast forward to like Kendrick Lamar, where he's at in the game, where how Good Kid, Mad City to me, and maybe to a lot of people, but I'm just going to speak from my perspective, it's a classic.
Yeah.
It's almost like Catcher in the Rye-esque.
Right,
I think
right.
it holds that weight. And then to see it not win, it wasn't surprising, but it was like, damn. Because it's like you root for these guys. You root for, and it's like, that's how I feel about, you know, what you do and your catalog. It's like, okay, it's like you have stake in this person, and then they lose to a Macklemore.
Right.
It's so blatantly obvious that, and it's just like, even Macklemore is like,
come on, right,
guys.
Right, oh, right,
like, Jesus,
yeah.
You know. So, how do you feel about that when I don't know, not being recognized or not being like getting the acclaim that you feel like you should be?
Yeah. For me, man, you know, damn, I'm kind of fighting bronchitis right now.
Okay.
But, nah, man, I think, one of the things for me that has kind of kept me grounded and has kind of kept me just from kind of going crazy, when you think about it, is that, you know, I believe that as an artist, as long as you work, And as long as you keep developing your craft and as long as you stay on your game, the longer it takes for people to catch up to you, the better the paycheck is when they finally catch up to you.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, you know, for me, I look at a cat like, you know, like a Sugar Otis, you know, who was a guitarist, singer, songwriter. And he wrote his most famous song is Strawberry Letter 23 by the Brothers Johnson.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was a guy that, you know, when I was young and I would look at records and I would play records like, you know, at my aunt's parties and stuff, and I would play DJ. I'm like, you know, 5, 6 years old. And so I would play records and I would look and it would say, hey, you know, the title would say, hey, the Brothers Johnson. And then it would be like in little numbers, in little letters, it would be Strawberry Letter 23. And then little letters, Sugar Otis, you know, that would be the guy in parentheses.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned, it's like, okay, the people in parentheses, those are the people that write the songs. Like,
right.
Those are the people that get the money. I want to be the guy in parentheses. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that kind of started it. And so with a cat like Sugar Otis, I mean, that was his most famous song that was cut on somebody else. You know what I mean? His version of it didn't really do anything. And so he had a resurgence, you know, his first album, you know, Inspiration Information, I think that was 74. He had like a resurgence in, you know, 2002.
Okay.
David Byrne of Talking Heads, he had his label, yeah. Luwakabop, they re-released it. And, you know, he had this big resurgence and he was able to like tour again. And, you know, from what I understand, he was able to make a good living. He was like did some stuff with Most for a while, but he was able to tour and he was doing pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
And so that for me is just a thing where as an artist, you know, you really it just may not be your time.
Right.
You know what I mean? It may not be your time. And, you know, I mean, even to the point, dude, I remember one time it was a fucking. I don't know if you ever seen that ad. It was saw it on Twitter. It was like a couple years ago, but it was basically a memo came out from somebody leaked a memo from Microsoft or somewhere.
Okay,
that was like from 1995, and it was this exec that had drew up what was essentially the modern day smartphone. He was like, eventually there's going to be a device. You know, I have an idea for this device. You know, you can call. You can take pictures with it. You know, you'll be able to message people from it. You know, it was, and he had drew out the prototype for it or whatever. But it was 1995, and people laughed him out the fucking building. You know what I'm saying? Oh, nobody's going to want to take pictures with their phone. What do you mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But lo and behold.
You can't stop them.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Taking pictures and video.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, a great idea in the wrong time is not for that time.
Right.
But it's still a great idea.
Yeah.
So, you know, a great album that came out in 74, it's still a great album. It just may not be a great album for 74. But if you can keep progressing and keep working and stay on your game and stay with it, when people catch up to it, if you can hang in there, when people catch up to it, you can get paid. But you just got to stay with it because sometimes, you know, sometimes you can have the right thing at the wrong moment.
Well, one of the things that since you bring that up, like I went to go see you at last year now.
Right.
At the Music Hall of Williamsburg. And I'm thinking like, oh, I'm just going to see Foreign Shanes, one of my favorite bands, going to have a good time. And then you start preaching. Like I'd seen you before like a bunch of times, but I was like, oh, I'm just gonna have a good time.
I don't have
to work the next day. It's just gonna be a good. And then you start talking about, you know, it's your season. Mm-hmm. Like when it, and that was something that stuck out to me. And I was like, well, damn. And I was like, I'm almost gonna cry.
The glory tale, you, brother.
Yeah, man. It was just like, and that was something that, like, already you've been mentioned tons of times on the show in a positive light. And I'm gonna stand out a little bit, but it's just like your music is already, like, I can look back at times in my life where your music little brother, Foreign Exchange, has been like at a pivotal point in my
life.
Thank you,
man. Thank you.
Like, I remember like just like seeing you guys and like seeing like Questlove talk about you guys on OK Player like in 2002. And like, oh, those guys look pretty cool. And then I remember the last day of my first year in grad school, I was living in Chicago, and this was the first time I told my parents, I said, I want to stay out here. Okay. I want to live here. Because I'm originally from Maryland, and this was like, I'm going to get an apartment, and my parents are like, we'll help you out. You get a job, we'll help you out. I came back with two jobs.
Wow.
And so I got like part-time at Best Buy teaching theater camp. I remember like the last day of class, I would go to the Crow's Nest, which is in the Loop of Chicago. Your album's there. And I remember hearing about your, and it was the last one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was the last album, and last CD, and I grab it, and I was like, it was a breath of fresh air.
Thank you so much.
It was like, because it was something that, it came at a time where music was like, I guess like you had the ringtone rappers and then the gangster stuff. I'm not really going to try to like shit on anybody just to build you up, but it's like, that was something that harkened back to like the Tribe Called Quest, yeah, the De La Soul, those, like, and I'm assuming what you probably said in interviews, little brother, you're taking the genre, you're moving it forward, but at the same time, putting your own imprint on it.
Very much so, very much so.
Can you talk about, I don't want to talk about why you guys broke up. Right. I want to talk about, like, how that happened. And what, so basically, where I want to lead you to is, your origin story. If you're a superhero,
yeah.
Where does it start?
Yeah, where was
where'd you grow up? All that.
Where was the planet Krypton?
Like, exactly.
Where was Oh man, planet Krypton for me had to have been just growing up around music. It was just always, you know, I feel sorry for people who don't know what they want to do because I don't know what that's like. I've always known what I want to do. Yeah, you know what I mean? It was never a question at all. It was never a question. I knew I always wanted to do music in some way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, Planet Krypton started with my mom. She was just always singing and playing music around. She would play music while we cleaned up on Saturday mornings and stuff. You know, it started.
This in Greensboro?
It eventually got to Greensboro. Before then, we live in a very small town called Red Springs, North Carolina. It's in Robinson County. It's about, like, from here, it's maybe, like, hour 45.
Okay.
Like that. All right. It's going back east.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I mean, you know, man, it started there, and she would just play records, and, you know, I would sing with her and whatever. And then, you know, Michael Jackson Thriller came out.
Okay.
And so my first... One of my earliest Christmases I remember was I got a record player, and my grandmother took me to the Piggly Wiggly, and she bought me Thriller.
And you could buy records?
You could buy records at the Piggly Wiggly. This is God, but 30-something years ago. But
Jesus.
Yeah, could buy records. They sold records in the Piggly Wiggly. And so she bought me Thriller. And yeah, man, I mean, that just, it messed me up. I just knew, I was like, I want to be this guy. This is what I want to do. And so from there on, you know, it was, you know, church, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then hip hop came.
Okay.
And that was just the knockout blow. Like, that was just, my life was ruined.
Okay.
It was just like, that's anything else you're trying to tell me, I ain't trying to hear it. You know, Fonte, you could be a lawyer, you could go to school, you have good grade, I know I hear all that, but fuck that shit. I want to rap, nigga.
Because you graduated with honors, right?
Yeah. I graduated with honors from Central in 2001.
Okay.
And yeah, man, you know, I was an English major, concentration was in journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my teachers, they would just say, like, yo, you missed your call, like, you need to go to law school. You make a good lawyer, you should go to law school. And I was like, oh, man. Nah,
Let's back up a little bit, because, like, I want to know, like, I guess when hit, because it seemed like, because almost I want to take it to where you are now as a singer, like, pretty much full-time singer. did you just put the singing in the background a little bit? But it's still evident in the listening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing about it, man, for me, I mean, just the singing for me was never something that I took serious.
Okay.
It was never something that I took serious. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, you know, we would go to, you know, we go to choir practice and stuff.
Yeah.
My thing was just, like, my grandmother would always make us go to church.
Yeah.
So I was like, I really don't want to go to church. Like, mm-hmm. I kind of hate church. But if I got to be here, let me just find something I like to do.
Sure.
If I could just pass the time. So fuck it, I'll sing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I started singing in the choir, and they would get me to lead songs. It was me and me and this girl of Vegas, Aisha Vegas. And I'm crazy thinking about this shit. Me and her would sing together.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I learned was, like, I mean, I could sing. I mean, I thought it was cool. But, I mean, there were other kids in the choir who could necessarily sing better than me, but they just didn't have the guts to do it.
Yeah.
And so I kind of learned at an early age, it's like, you know, hustle will beat talent.
Right.
If talent is scared or if talent is lazy, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was just kind of the thing. So for me, singing was just always something that I just did just as a function. I mean, even
it was
like
in your arsenal.
Yeah, it was just a weapon in my arsenal. But it was like, I mean, it wasn't my sidearm. It was like, it wasn't on my holster. It was like, I got to go get it. And then when I would get it, motherfuckers like, oh, shit. I was like, oh, well, maybe I need to put this bitch. Maybe she needed my primary weapon. Maybe I had my weapons wrong all along. You know what I mean?
Because just like on my way up here, like I was listening, just reacquainting myself with your, not to say like I had to reacquaint myself, but I'll let this open up part of my pre-show ritual the past few months, like past 6 months. I rediscovered those two band practice records.
Oh my god! Okay, yeah.
And
god,
so
yeah.
It's like, so like I would, those would, those two songs would be the first two songs I would listen to when I'm on my way to go do a show.
Oh wow! Okay,
just to get in the right mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
So and then just but driving up here, it's like I'm thinking like, okay, I listened to, I don't think I had ever heard Atari 2600.
Oh, wow.
Before. Because I was looking up the Wikipedia, so they came, the first song was Atari 2600. I don't know if that's true.
It's not. It's on the internet, so it must be true.
But it's like, I was like, okay, it was just you, it's you singing and then doing like, what, RZA or whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, he's singing. He's always been singing. And then listening to the listening, it's like, it's all over the place. Like, you're singing all over. So it was never like a hidden thing, but it just, so you were how old when you were in the choir?
I was choir, oh God, that's had to be, shit, 12,
mm-hmm.
13 maybe.
Okay.
11, yeah, something like that, 11, 13. And I mean, I would just sing and, you know, I sing and it's like, okay, if I sang good in the choir, then, you know, on the way home, like, you know, my grandmother would take me to, I don't know, get candy or some shit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, it was very much kind of a give and take. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. You know, that was it. But yeah, man, I mean, you know, that was it. And so when we started doing those early Little Brother records, I would just sing on the records, but it was never meant to be, in my mind, it was never meant to be, you know, final. It was always just kind of, okay, let me sing it. I'm going to get the idea down. I want to do it good, but
For references,
right, exactly. Yeah. But it's like, okay, we'll get someone else to come and do it. That was always my idea.
Right.
And, but we would do it and, you know, we'd be sitting there and Ninth would be like, yo, that shit sounds dope. It's cool.
Yeah.
And Pooh's like, all right, cool. So I was like, well, I mean, if y'all think it's cool, all right. You know what I mean? It's, you know. So it was just one of those things. And so it wasn't until after the listening came out that, you know, I started getting calls. You know, people would be like, well, yo, you want to get Fonte on the joint? And it's like, all right, so, you know, how many bars, whatever. It's like, oh, yeah, I mean, you do whatever, but we want you to do a hook, too. And I was just like, oh, shit. Like, really? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until, I think, around, like, maybe 2006,
mm-hmm.
7, I'm sorry, 2007, I did a session at Jazzy Jeff's house. And, you know, me and Pooh had gone down there to do some work for his record. And, you know, we drove to Delaware. And
is that Relax Yourself?
Yeah, that joint.
That's fucking great.
Thank you so much, man. Yeah, dude. So that record, so we were driving, and me and Pooh were driving down there, we're on the way, and we just like, yo, nigga. Bars, nigga. Yeah, just think bars, nigga. Right. Bars, just bars. I'm ready, you know what I mean? And so we get to Jeff's house, and he's playing, like, all this kind of R&B shit. And it was dope as fuck, but I'm just like, okay, I guess our bar strategy is not really...
Sure.
We've been thwarted. So I was like, okay, well, how do we spin this? And so I literally did that record in, shit, probably like 2 hours. I mean, because Jeff had to catch a flight. He was, I mean, you know, he plays all of every fucking
thing.
But he had a flight to go somewhere. So he was like, all right, let's do one. I was like, all right, well, just throw the mic up, man. Let's go. And... that was like wrote and recorded and maybe like 2 hours. And it was a guy in there that was like videotaping stuff. And he was just like, you know, he was like, yo, man, like you sound really good. I'm just like, man, I'm in the booth. And I'm like, I just don't want to let Jeff down. I mean, I'm just trying. He was like, nah. And so then we finished the record. I came down and I sat down with Jeff and he was like, bruh, like you really, he's like, you need to do this. And I was like, man, like. I mean, I don't get it. He was like, nah, bro. He's like, man. He's like, you know, you're the only other person. He's the only person. He was like, the other person that I had the same conversation with was Jill Scott. He said she was the exact same way.
She was a poet.
Yeah. She was like, Jill just wanted to do poetry. Didn't really want to sing. She was just like, I'll sing whatever. And I told her, like, if you don't sing, like, you're fucking crazy. Like,
thank God, what are you doing? DJ Jazzy Jeff.
Jeff is he's a guru, man. He's one of my Yoda figures that, you know, I go to. And, you know, when he said it, you know, he was like, Fonte, you know, man, people will often see things in yourself that you don't see.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And sometimes you just got to let go. You just got to trust. You have to trust that thing. You know, even if you don't see it in yourself, if someone else is seeing it, then you have to let go and trust and say, okay, well, maybe there's something to it. And from that point on, that was when I really just went singing full tilt. I mean, I was still rhyming, of course, but that was when I really started taking myself seriously as a singer and really training myself as a singer and, like, learning, like, really, you know, learning the craft, exactly.
Well, so this makes me think if that was 2007... and which was around the time when Get Back came out, like in the fall. So you're leading off that Get Back album with, I guess you have the first, what's the, oh shit, the second track.
Can't Win for Losing.
And you say,
like, I referenced that conversation. Yeah.
So that's what that was.
Yeah, that's where that came from.
So I want to stick in the Little Brother area a little bit, but the dynamic that you guys had, it was sort of like Pooh was this James Evans rapping guy.
Straight to the point.
And very, very workmanlike. And you were the guy, like, you were like, all right, dude, we're going to kill this, but let's have a little fun, too.
Yeah, let's dance.
And it wasn't like Pooh was, like, not about fun, because you see his personality come out through these records. But it's just like you were the fun guy. And that's like kind of like what the live shows were, too. I guess talk about, I mean, how that happened, how that came together, you, Knife, and Pooh, and then the ride, the highs. Let's talk about the highs.
right.
I just want to, like, because I think what you guys did, and somebody, Michael Crichton, was the first person that I ever remember saying, write what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you guys did. And I, going back to, you know, you guys grabbed the baton from Tribe and Black Star and everybody, and you took it forward. But there was something that you guys had that a lot of people don't, a lot of groups don't, where it was just like you guys were commenting on a culture and a society that you were also participating in.
Gotcha.
Like when you got your records like Life of the Party and After the Party.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like the game is just like, oh, I'm going to get these girls. And, well, what if we don't get the girls?
Right.
Like,
right. What if the girl strategy fails?
I'm getting a fancy banana shake and I'm going to get some hush puppies. I'm turning
it in. Yeah, that's just turning it in. Fuck it.
Like, it's like, because it's something that, like, you don't see. And it's like, with you in particular, it's like, full disclosure, you're in my top five.
Thank you so much, brother.
I'm not the listeners, oh, he's standing out. He's standing out. Whatever. You got to give people their flowers while they're still alive.
I appreciate that, brother. Thank you so much.
But what I like about you is the fact that it's like you have, like, these great, these, some of, and we talked about this, like, a year ago, where it's like you have these rappers that are these god MCs, and it's through no fault of their own, they're just on this level to where it's like they're supreme, and it's almost like they're not human. Like Black Thought comes to mind.
Yeah, he's from somewhere else.
And I just think, like, he's, like, the greatest. But it's like, you come off as being of the earth. Like, you expose yourself, like, you can see the flaws. A lot of your material is biographical. And we get to see who you are, what's behind the curtain.
Yeah, totally.
And what makes it a little more, it's I don't know. It's like there's more. How do I want to say it? It just seems like you're of the earth, and there's more. It's easy to latch on to you.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was just always a thing of, you know, to me, emceeing, it has to work on several levels. You know what I mean? It has to work on a level to where, you know, it has to be technically good, you know, mm-hmm. it has to be technically sound, but, you know, it also has to have emotion, you know.
Yeah.
You got to hit people in the head and in the heart, you know, sometimes even more so in the heart, I would say. You know, I mean, that was why, you know, Tupac is such a divisive figure
mm-hmm.
in, you know, in music, just because the straight up lyricist dudes are like, he couldn't fucking rap, that nigga, he rhymed Hennessy and Enemies 100 times, nigga.
You can feel.
You know what I'm saying? Right. Yeah. But his fans like, nah, but you felt Pac. And that's just the thing where it's like, I mean, how can you argue with that? You know, if whatever, for whatever reason, if you're able to create something that resonates and strikes a chord with people where they are just willing to just go die hard, you know, for you, it's just like 50 Million Elvis fans can't be wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's like, so for me, it has to work on both levels as an MC. It has to work on a level where, you know, technically it has to be dope, and it has to sound good. Just the phonics, like phonetically, it has to just sound fly coming out your mouth. So even if even if you don't get the line, or if I drop a punchline or whatever, or I make some kind of crazy literary reference, you know, you don't get it, but it still sounds fly. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I mean, there were kids that, like, when I put out my solo album, Dancing in the Rain, it was, you know, and I said, you know, Peter Cottontail hopping over beats and rocking acapella since the days of Akinel.
Mm-hmm.
They had no fucking clue who Akineli was.
Right.
And I didn't expect them to, but it sounded good, and it completed the phrase.
Right.
So it has to work on that level, and it has to work on a level to where I'm a writer from the standpoint of, like, I can drop an obscure reference, and everybody in the crowd may miss it, but if there's going to be that one guy or that one girl that's going to be like, oh, shit, you know what I mean?
And it's me.
And
I get it.
Right, and it's worth it. To me, it's worth it for that one guy, because that one person will spread the gospel, like, yo, y'all, you missed it. That nigga said da-da-da-da-da, you know?
Yeah.
And that was a reference to this, and, you know, whatever. So that was always just kind of my aim. You know, I wanted to write stuff that is technically good just based from my English background. I want something that my old English professor would be proud of. But also something that, you know, people could listen to and it will resonate with them in some way and would speak to something in their lives. And that, to me, has just always kind of been the purpose of art. You know, it's you know, to make people, you know, to make you feel less alone in the world, you know?
Yeah.
You hear something and it's like, yo, that nigga, yo, I went through that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's kind of what I go for.
Yeah, man, because it seems like to me, and just the aesthetic of what Little Brother was, it's like the album cover, you guys are, you know, it's pictures of you guys. I think, this is the back cover, or you guys are at the bus stop?
Yeah, that's the listening area.
You're at the bus stop. And then the liner notes, you guys are in the record store.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, okay, these guys aren't fucking around. They're regular guys.
Yeah.
And, like, you guys talk about going to college. And it's not like saying like, oh, I'm an elitist because I went to college, but it's just like,
Cambridge.
Yeah, it's like, oh, these guys are like me, but they're a lot cooler, but they're like, but they're like right. me, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So it's just like, and I think that was something that was different too, because maybe a year or two later you had, well, that same year, a little later, College Dropout came out.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when, I remember when Late Registration came out, it was sort of like, I remember listening to this. I'm in Chicago. I'm riding the bus. Mm-hmm. I'm listening to it. I love Kanye. And it's just like the little skits about going to school and being the fuck. I was like, damn, I'm working on my master's degree. Am I fucking up?
Yeah,
like,
right,
it's
right,
making
right.
me question it. It's just like, damn, it's kind of making me feel bad about my, like, trying to better myself. But, like, you guys sort of just had that thing, and you had it on lock, and it just seemed like that was your thing. Like,
Thank you, man.
We were regular dudes.
Yeah, it was really just, you know, I mean, I don't know. I just really wanted to just, you know, when just writing a lot of that early stuff, you know, I never wanted to take on a role I couldn't play 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that's why I just rhymed under my real name. It was just, you know, there's no, Fonte is this person, but MC Galactical Scientific, you know, he's another guy. It's scientific. Like, you know what I mean?
Is that a Clockers reference?
Right. It gets some chocolate humor and shit.
Yeah.
But nah, man, but so that was it. Yeah. I'm just like, yo, I don't feel like playing a role. I don't feel like, you know, having to put on this thing, whatever that is. I'm gonna just be me.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, but I really just try to present as honest of a picture of myself. You know, you can't tell everything. I mean, everything
sure,
can
of be course.
Yourself, you know, but, you know, is I want people to be like, yo, listen to me on record, and then if we out and be just having drinks or whatever, it's the same dude.
Now, do you think that path sometimes is harder, or is it a longer path, or is it as opposed just being as authentic as you can, as you like to be on, you know?
I think you can be authentic whether that path is lucrative for you or not.
Right.
It depends on what kind of authenticity is marketable.
Sure.
Okay. You know what I mean? Okay. It's like, you know, I mean, do I think 2 Chainz is a guy that really loves strippers? Yeah, I do.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, when you write, I love them strippers, like, I really think that's a heartfelt record from him. You know what I mean? And I mean, and I know him.
Sure.
Like, you know,
we
worked together like years ago, but before he was,
when he was Titty Boy.
Yeah. Okay. But, you know, but when I saw him become 2 Chainz, I was like, yeah, that's him. You know what I mean? He was always just the more kind of flashy dude. You know, that was just, he was just that personality. That was him, you know? So, you know, that was, he was able to sell that persona, because I think that was really him in a lot of ways. So if you look at now, you know, you look at cats like, you know, J. Cole selling, you know, selling gold, and him, you know, showing up at people's houses and playing record. You know, that kind of quote unquote regular guy authenticity is more marketable now than, say, it was, I don't know, I mean, you know, shit, 03 when we first came out, and it was kind of, you know, I don't know. It's there's more of a lane for it now. You know, you can have you know, a Drake and a Wale and a Cole and a Kendrick, you know.
Yeah.
You can have all those things, and they're all on major labels. You know, the hardest thing for us, you know, when we started, was that there was really no movement, kind of. You know, there was no, you know, like, you know, my analogy is like, there's a reason why every time you see a McDonald's, you see a Burger King right close to it, you know, or you see a Wendy's right next to it, you know, because they all need each other. You know, they need, there has to be something, you know, there has to be something to guide and shape the mind of the listener on a subconscious level. So if you're driving down, you know, down Capitol Boulevard or whatever, and you want chicken, you're thinking chicken, if you see a McDonald's sign, then you see a Wendy's sign, then you see a Burger King sign, now you're thinking about hamburgers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, it really don't matter whichever one you go to, that's your choice, but you want a burger, you know what I mean? And you say, hey, these places offer burgers. Music is the exact same way. You need You need a Drake, a Kendrick, a Wale. You need all those things so that you can have a cluster of some kind of movement to where people can say, okay, 2 Chainz is this,
yeah,
but Kendrick Lamar is that.
Right.
It's just something to differentiate between A and B. And one of the hardest things with LB was just that, you know, we were one of the only groups on a major,
yeah,
that was kind of doing it. You know, I mean, even Kanye at the time, you know, I mean, College Dropout came out and, you know, that was one thing, but...
But was that before or after you guys did that I See Now record?
College Dropout came after I See Now.
Okay.
It came after I See Now. Because okay. He was playing... He played us some of it, and he played us, like, early, just kind of rough mixes of shit.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, that was the first. That okay. was That came before that. Well, I See Now came, and then... He put out College Dropout.
Okay.
So yeah, man, I mean, you know, at the time, you know, we were, the time we came in at Minstrel Show, you know, in 05, you know, I mean, dude, you got to think, this was like ringtone rap was like the fucking.
Yeah, that was it.
You know what I mean? It was, you know, them Franchise Boys and just all this kind of snap fucking pop shit.
Yeah.
You know, which had its place, you know, I ain't knocking right. it, but that's what we were up against. Yeah. We were the only hamburger stand in a sea of fucking, you know, chicken sandwiches. You know what I mean? There was no army at all.
Yeah.
No.
It seemed like there's room for all of that. Like, I don't want people to think, you know, there's room for Kendrick and Cole and Drake mm-hmm. and 2 Chainz and whoever. But it just seemed like, where do I want to go with that? Like, it seemed like they were there because of what you guys did.
Very much so. And that, which goes back to our original point, what we opened up the conversation with, if you can stick around,
yeah. Yeah.
like, to let it come back around to you,
yeah.
you know, you can prosper from it. But, you know, I mean, had LB, you know, made it and kept making records, you know, post Spencer Show and post, you know, everything. And
yeah.
had we stuck around long enough to ride that wave of the cats who were influenced directly by us, would that have been a difference? I mean, possibly, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I don't know. It's easy to play, you know, history.
Of course.
Just,
yeah.
you know, and hindsight, yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
So who knows, I mean, if it would have been that way. But yeah, that was just another thing where, you know, when we came out what we were doing, it just, the timing just wasn't. I mean, regardless of if you think the music was good or not, you know, the time for that, it was just kind of out of time. It wasn't the yeah. right time for
but
it.
But the shit's still great. But
oh,
it's
thank
like,
you, man.
But it's like, with the Minstrel Show, because the listening was one thing. The listening, and just look, just like...
Yeah, can we pause real quick?
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah. All
right.
Okay, so we got the chicken levels up.
Yeah, chicken levels back up.
That was great.
Everything lit, nigga.
That was really good. I've experienced the takeout of Raleigh, North Carolina, so I feel like my blackness levels are... On a all-time peak for the new year.
Word them up.
So we talked a little bit about like the Little Brother era, but then like this what I would call your seminal album from that era, the Minstrel Show.
Okay.
So the listening was a concept album in the way that it was at the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
WJLR.
JLR, yeah.
And then you guys had the TV show, the You Black Niggas Network, and how did that come up? And how did you get Chris Hardwick on there? I don't even think he realizes how important this album is. I don't think he does. Because I remember somebody trolling him or saying something mean to him. And he was like, hey, man, that's not nice. You know, because mm-hmm. Hardwick is a nice dude. He's like, that's not nice. And the guy was like, no, I didn't mean it, man. The Minstrel Show was amazing. You know?
Right,
like,
right.
Like, so right. I don't think he realizes how important that album is to... hip-hop history. So just talk a little bit about how the concept came about and
oh man, Hardwick, man. Well, the thing with the Minstrel Show, it was very much mm-hmm. a thing where we were at the time, you know, every LB record, it all kind of served a purpose. And so the first record, the listening, you know, we wanted to show that cats could make you know, classic, you know, golden era hip hop coming from the South. You know, that was kind of the chip on our shoulder at the time. And then with Minstrel Show, that was when we assigned to Atlantic. And so then for me, the focus became, we have to show our fans that we can still do us on a major label. Mm-hmm. You know, I put myself in a fan's position. I'm just like, well, you know, if I heard that my favorite band had signed to a major, the first thought of my mind is, it's fucking over. You know, the first thought of my mind is, well, it's fun while it lasted, fellas. You know, we've lost them to the fucking corporate overlord.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just a thing of, well, okay, man, well, if we're going to make this record on a major, we got to show our fans, just as a show of faith, that they don't have to worry about any majors trying to change our sound. Mm-hmm. We can still do us, you know.
Right.
And so that's what it was, you know. So when it came down to the concept of the Minstrel Show, it was very much a thing where, okay, if WJLR represents a radio station and, you know, these guys got upgraded, so to speak, where do you go from radio? You go to TV.
Mm.
So that was the was the line of thinking. And so, so with Minstrel Show, it was very much taking that concept and looking at what is going around, what was happening in music at the time.
Right.
And, you know, just really being, I don't know, just kind of being observant, like you said, you know, observant of the culture that I'm participating in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, had we named the album something else, had we named the album, I don't know, Raw Uncut Hip Hop or some shit.
Yeah.
People probably would have never even, it probably would have went over and, you know, no one would have thought twice about it. But, you know, just by giving it that title, it raised a lot of questions. And so, for me, you know, looking back on the record as a concept album, I mean, I think, you know, things I certainly could have done better. But
what do you think?
I probably would have made it a lot less self-referential. I probably would have took a lot of talk about us rapping about the rap game. Like, I would have took that out. I would have focused more on just the human condition, just, you know, just struggles we face as human beings. But well, I mean, not necessarily.
But you had All For You. Is that, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, that's a dad song.
No, I feel you. But I would have wrote more of those. You know, I would, not necessarily dad songs, but just songs that just speak to a human struggle versus a little brother struggle. You feel me?
Yeah.
So that was probably one thing I would do different. But it was just one of those things, man, like where, you know, we did the record and I don't know. I mean, the irony of it all was that, you know, when I did the Cheating record, I was thinking, okay, this is like so ignorant. This is like, I mean, 13, 14, 15, can't think of nothing around with 15. Like, you would think that that's just over the top. But that was the joint Atlantic wanted to make a single. And so it pretty much. And so,
but Loving It ended up being the first lead.
Loving It ended up being the lead single. And Loving It for us was just something where that was supposed to be. We just kind of saw it as just a street record. That was just the buzz record. But Atlantic, they heard and they really liked that one. We were just like, all right, if y'all fucking with it, y'all fucking with it. And so we just did it. I mean, again, that was why we had Scudder on that record. We was talking about third verses. Was just one, you know, that was like a crew record. It was just, all right, Scudder, that's my homeboy. Let's put him on this.
Something about him, man. Like, I was going, when Pooh released Sleepers, was that 05?
That was
04, 05?
04, I was 05, something like
that. I remember that song, Scars, like his Cut fucking verse, like, that shit was just like, it was some powerful shit. Because I remember listening to that record, I would have to get up. I ran a before and after school program. My listeners know this. When I lived in Chicago, I ran a before and after school program. And I would walk. Like, I would have to catch two or three buses to get to that gig. And it was just like, and I was listening to my hip. And Scars, man.
Ooh, nah, that's a hard ass
that verse on that record. I remember
cut that record.
I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's a strong, that song, man.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. He hung that shit.
Yeah.
And so, Loving It was kind of, it was just one of those, it was like that. It was like, okay, you the closeout, man.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Let's put him on. And, you know, it was just more so a nod to our fans mm-hmm. that were, you know, before it. But, you know, we had no idea it was going to be the lead single. Mm-hmm. And so when they made the lead single, we were like, okay. And so then after that, you know, the record, they were like, yo, cheating. It's cheating record. Hmm. And I was like, yo, that's not, that's kind of a parody. Like,
with, yeah.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, but yo, that's your jam. I'm like, dude, that's so not the fuck. You know. Yeah, you know I mean? And that was the moment when I really just kind of stopped doing parodies in okay. that sense, because it's just, to me, the only way a parody works is if you have something that is the direct opposite of it mm-hmm. that you can look against and say, again, you know, this is A and this is B.
Yeah.
But when B starts looking more and more like A and they're mm-hmm. practically indistinguishable, then the parody loses its impact, you know?
And it seemed like, well, that fit the construct of the album. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like just listening to the, from going through the listening and then with the minstrel show, it seems with each album there was a knowledge that you guys had.
Yeah.
So it's like when Pooh starts off Beautiful Morning, it's like my coat, it was the same with the lines, like my coattail's getting heavy because I'm living mm-hmm, my dreams. Yeah. I still struggle just like you, but mm-hmm. I'm just doing what I love to do. Yeah. And then it's like, and then you come on, and then with that, the Becoming, right? Because it's the Beautiful Morning mm-hmm, slash Becoming. Yeah. And then it's just like, well, this is my origin story.
Yeah, yeah, very much. Yeah.
And it's just like, because it's still one of those things where it's just like, well, this is, we're rapping and we're showing you we can kill it. And we have this through line, but it wasn't, because to me, it's just like a good rap album.
Thank you.
But then people were just like, well, it's, they're trying to do this, and they're talking about and they're talking about rap, and they're commenting. But I just saw it as like, it's a good album.
Just rapping, yeah.
These guys are just rapping.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, man.
But it's not like oh, Fonte the God. But it's just like so. And another reason why I don't always give critics too much, but you like to hear what people are saying.
Yeah, what they take from it. Yeah,
and. I guess there's something else I wanted to say about that record was just like, I don't know, but that it just came at the right time. Cause for me, I remember as a fan, it was just like, I was listening to white girls, singer, songwriter, and white girls that had like I was listening to Fiona Apple, oh, Rachel wow. Yamagata.
Okay.
They're talented people, but it's just like, because they're talking about something, they're telling a story, they're doing what they're doing, and it's like, because the genre was getting kind of dead, like R&B and hip-hop, it was just like one note, and it was just sort of like, you guys were doing your thing, and then you had Lupe come out of that, you still had Kanye, guys that had some kind of, that had weight to what they were saying, mm-hmm. And then, like, going back to your conversation with Jazzy Jeff, when the shift is almost coming with the Get Back, and there were issues within the group, and you're working with other producers and things like that. But again, just a good album. Like,
thank you, man.
With the catalog of material, it never fell off. But what I want to talk about now, Foreign Exchange, Connected was out, mm-hmm. and it was a good record. It was almost like a. What do you call it? Like, we were talking about the Roots while we were eating, just like as far as, like, to me, it seemed like with Rising Down coming out, mm-hmm. it almost seemed like the band, it was shifting towards them being a collective, having different people. You were on there, Blue, and all these other guys. That's what, you know, Connected seemed to be for me. It's like, oh, it's a good album, the rap, and Fonte's singing a little bit. But then Daykeeper comes out.
Yeah.
And that seemed like, you were always singing, but when that came out, like maybe 2008, it was like almost like a seismic shift to where it's like, okay, this is totally different.
Yeah, yeah, very much.
What, after that conversation with Jazzy Jeff, and then that shift, how did you get there from that point?
From that point on, I mean, that was pretty much the point. You know, I had spent several years trying to write songs. and just really wanting to be a songwriter because, again, you know, I want to be the guy in parentheses. Yeah. I want to be that guy. So that was pretty much always my focus. You know, I wanted to be the guy. You know, didn't really want to be in the spotlight and shit. It's like, if I can just get my money quietly, that's all I need. You know what I'm saying? And so it started there. But around that time, around like 06, 07, by this time I had spent maybe like 2-3 years just trying to get placements with different artists, trying to shop my songs, whatever, and nothing really, you know, came from it. So the thing about
stuff with Nicolay already.
I mean, some of it was stuff with Nick. Some of it was stuff with, you know, with Ninth Crisis. Right. You know, just pitching songs. You know, just writing songs and, you know, recording them and, you know, and pitching them. And, you know, the thing about it, man, was that it was just pretty much a thing where by the time you write a song and you produce it and you track it and, you know, you do all the vocals and you arrange the backgrounds and shit, by the time you do all that, it's like, shit, I could have kept this shit for myself. You know what I mean?
Brother? Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's the time that you spent in the, you know, in money that you spent to produce a demo for something, you know, it's very much the reason why, you know, towards the end of the 2000s, the early aughts, I don't know what we call
it. Sure,
the,
yeah.
But the 2000s, yeah. Before we got to the 10s, you saw so many singer-songwriters come out. Well, not singer-songwriters. You saw so many songwriter-turned-singers.
Yeah.
You saw cats like Kerry Hilson, Neo, Sean Garrett, you know, dudes who were, you know, a fucking, what was the other cat? Seven, not, it was, the other dude that was on Def Jam, I can't remember his name, but they were dudes who pretty much were songwriters, but they were just like, well, fuck it. I mean, I might as well go for broke for myself, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what it was. So pretty much, man, by that time, by the time we started working on the next one, the second Foreign Exchange album, I was just like, well, man, the only way I'm going to get noticed for my songwriting is if I sing them. So I might as well just do this shit and I'm going to just go for broke and just do me and let's just see what happens.
You bet on yourself.
Yeah, it was a big bet. It was a big bet.
Because it, you were always doing, and what's fascinating about you is the fact that it's just like, you come from that, the hip hop and the boom bam, the bravado, the tough guy, even though you don't, that's what that genre,
that genre
is.
Yeah, like
I'm,
it is.
I can rhyme, I'm this, I'm that, I'm whatever. But then, like, opening yourself up with Leave It All Behind, because, like, it's, I mean, I guess that the title of the album is telling, even though the records itself is just essentially a lullaby to your sons, right?
Yeah, yeah, the actual song, yeah.
But just looking at that album cover, is that a wedding that didn't happen? Or is it something where people left?
Right.
Or is a storm coming? You know, because when I first listened, because when I heard it, I was like, oh shit, this is cool. What's happening?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And why was that the lead single? I think it was a great choice, but why was it?
Thank you, man. Well, the thing with Daykeeper was that was a record that, you know, when we cut it, you know, I just knew. You know, did I see a Grammy coming for, a nomination coming from it? Nah, I didn't see that far. But I just knew after it was over, I was like, yeah, bro, like this is some shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just, as an artist, those moments are very fleeting. You know, those moments where you just know that you've hit greatness, is like, yo, we fucking nailed it at that point.
Now, you know? Since you brought that up, do you find yourself chasing that, or is it
always, okay. always? You always, you know, it's not to say that you're trying to write the quote unquote next Daykeeper, because I think once you have those pivotal moments in your career, I mean, you can never re-chase them. You can never recapture them.
Right.
But there is certainly the thing that drives me is just the feeling that it's never good enough.
But that's a healthy pursuit, right?
You know what? The older I get, it becomes a little more healthier. When I was younger, it was totally unhealthy.
Okay.
Totally unhealthy. And I paid for it in every way. Physically, emotionally, family-wise. Like, I wrecked everything in the process. But as I get older now, it's, you know, now I'm to the point where, you know, I can actually send a rough mix out. You know, it took the longest time for me. I mean, I would go, I mean, before I built my studio at home, mm-hmm. we were recording in Durham, and I would literally leave at like 9 o'clock on a Thursday and come back home on, you know, a Saturday.
That's like,
and, you know,
yeah,
and just,
yeah.
you know, I mean, we would sleep in the studio, we would fucking, I mean, just the stuff that we would just put our bodies and our families and just everybody through just trying to catch this thing, you know, which is a big reason why Whiplash spoke to me so much.
Well, that's why, like, I was going to bring that up.
You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah. I have this thing, but was it really worth it? And that's a question that, you know, every man, every woman, you know, has to answer for themselves. So yeah, man, I mean, so pretty much that was it. So when we finished Daykeeper, I was just like, man, I really feel like we got something. And so the first single, I wanted it to let people know that this is not Connected Part 2.
Right. You
know, this is,
and it
not
definitely wasn't.
Yeah. yeah. so
yeah.
it was just something just to let people know off rip, like, okay, it's not anything unlike we've ever done. You know, even though we may have had hints of this kind of shit coming right. on Connected, you know, Connected did have, you know, records like Come Around and
yeah.
the end thing that was kind of on some house shit, but
right.
never just full out this way.
Because you only rapped about, I think you only rapped twice on
mm-hmm, okay, Leave It On Leave It On High. Yeah.
yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that was just really, Dakey was just really just drawing that hard line in the sand, like saying, look, this is what it is, and, you know, this is what it is.
Yeah. Just we're talking about this, just talk a little bit about the construction of that song. Like, most of the listeners who know who you are, like, know about your linking up with Nicolay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe speak on that a little bit, but at the same time, just talk about how does that process happen with regards to Daykeeper, as far as, like, do you get the beat first? Do you have the lyrics? Or how are they meshing?
Yeah, Daykeeper, when he first sent me to it, you know, all the songs, all the tracks that Nick sends me, they all have working titles.
Okay.
And so the working title for Daykeeper was Shibuya.
That which was his album.
Yeah, okay. That which was album came. So it was a track that I think he made while he was in Japan.
Okay.
But you know, it was called Shibuya. And the original mix of the track was really, like, loud and distorted. And we thought about keeping it that way for the album, but just because it was kind of like on some Nine Inch Nails shit. It was just really driving.
Mm-hmm.
It was really crunchy and distorted. I mean, the shit was dope. But, yeah, so I called at the time. I called Musina, and
she's from D.C.
Right? She's from D.C.
Yeah.
Musina, you know, I found her on MySpace.
Okay,
my buddy cousin B, who is real good friend of mine for some years now, and he hit me and was like, "Yo, man, it's this new chick." He's like, "Nigga, she sound like Georgia. She make her own beats and she rap, and was she even rap? She produce shit." I was like, all right. And so he sent me the SoundCloud link. I mean, MySpace link.
Sure. Yeah.
And he sent me the joint, man. And I remember we were on tour with LB, and mm-hmm. me and Darian Brockinson, we used to roommate together when we toured with
LB.
He's
terrific, too.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Like, yeah, he's an incredible singer.
Yeah.
And we would room together. And so we literally sat in the room together. We played Musina. By the time we left her page, she had like an extra like 1,000 plays just from us, because we was just running that shit all fucking day. You know what I mean? And so, you know, that was just how it was. And so I hit her up and, you know, I was just like, look, you know, I'm about to start work on the new Foreign Exchange album. And, you know, I haven't even written any songs yet, but I just know I got to have you on it. I know you're going to, I want you on it. And she was just like, okay. <You know? laughs> And she later came to my house shortly after that, I got off tour, and Daykeeper was one of the songs. Like, I wrote it in the studio that night.
Hmm.
And all I had was, I had the hook, and, you know, she did the hook, and then I wrote the verses, and it was, yeah, it was very much a kind of just a give and take kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I wrote it, and then I did just like was the rough version. And then Nick was like, yo, I got an idea for something else. How long would she be in town? And I was like, well, I think she'll be here for like another day or two. Mm-hmm. He was like, all right, well, I'm working on something else. So then he sent me back the track, and he added the middle part that's in six. The okay.
Right.
So that was when we came back, and Musina added the harmonies over that part.
Okay.
And so that was that. And I wrote that. So why won't you stay here with me?
Yeah.
So that was that. So after that, I mean, yeah, dude. I mean, we were sitting down we were riding in the car on the way back home, and I was just looking at it. I was like, yo, man, this is about to change your life.
The more you think of it, hearing you talk about it, it's like, it's a monster of a song. And I think that my definition, calling that seismic, was correct. So I'm patting myself on the back.
All right.
Because I was thinking about it. I was like, is that the right way to describe it? And it's like, yeah, it is. Because that's opening up. It's almost like when I was watching that Nas documentary. And Q-Tip, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Q-Tip's talking about what's the record he produced? Oh my God, what's wrong with me?
Was it
What up? You know,
One Love.
He's talking about One Love. And it's like, he's talking about, like, in a couple of bars, Nas, you know, describes the plight of the projects, the plight of the black man. It's almost like I'm not gonna censor myself. But it's sort of like you kind of opened it up and made it okay for black dudes to sing about, like, the black dudes of my generation. Because it seemed like all the time it's always been the older dudes that were singing
very much, yeah.
Like these older dudes, and, you know, like Teddy and Marvin and all that. But it's like a guy my age talking about, I can't sleep at night, or I want to bring you some wings on your lunch break. You know, it's just like, it's that
simple. Yo, that shit keep the love together, bro.
It's
the real shit.
It's like, so it's like, and you can, like, there's like the turmoil, it just opened up a lot.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I think that song, that was like the gateway into a lot of people that probably had never heard.
Thank you, man. I mean, it was, you know, for me, the foreign exchanges, we got more and more into it. You know, it was very much a thing where I wanted to make R&B for men.
Yeah.
And when I say that, it's, you know, like, not, you know, it's in a very
you can sing in your car way. Like,
right,
sing, and maybe there's another dude in the car
and y'all can sing. I mean, together. Dude, like, I remember being a teenager and, like, me and my boys would ride out to Jodeci.
Yeah.
Like, we'd be four deep in the car singing Jodeci. All key, all trying to hum.
Yeah.
But, nigga, we was singing Jodeci. And it wasn't no homo.
Right.
It wasn't
right.
No pause. It's right. Just we four deep in this goddamn Hyundai Elantra
right.
Singing Jodeci. And I dare you to fucking say something. Like, that's just what it was.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, but somewhere along the line, I think R&B became a thing where it became more of a... It became kind of, because it was such a female fan base, it became a thing where I think writers and artists started pandering to women.
Sure.
I think there's a difference between, you know, just writing a song and saying, hey, you know, whatever, but then blatant pandering.
Right, right.
And, you know, when R&B became, ooh, baby, I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna do that and I'm gonna love you forever and I'm gonna do, you know, when it became just kind of a bunch of platitudes rather than real emotion. You know, I think that kind of turned a lot of guys off, and it became R&B for a lot of guys just became a genre of music that they tolerated rather than appreciated. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, man, my girl like this shit. Man, I listen to this gay ass shit.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Because for me, I'm a closeted wannabe R&B singer. So I grew up, like, thinking Another Bad Creation was cool. The Boys were cool.
Right, yeah.
The Down My Heart shit, like Tevin Campbell.
And great songs.
Yeah.
They were great songs.
And it's just like, so it's like to have you up there and doing your things, like, yes, like, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I want my shows, you know, when I would tell people, you know, I was like, I want my shows, I want the male and the female check.
Well, you draw everybody.
I don't want my show to be the show. It's like, fuck, man, my girl want to go see Fox Shane, nigga. Goddamn, let me go. You know what I mean?
Right.
I want it to be, you know, both the man and the woman in the relationship. They're both equally, you know, excited to go because there's something there for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's enough, you know, there's, I mean, there's sincerity and there's, you know, some tenderness, I guess, you know, for the woman, you know, mm-hmm. and but there's also some realness for the guys.
Just, you know, like, I want you, the girl kicks you out of the bedroom and you're like, I wanted to go play Xbox on the big screen anyway.
Yeah, it's so like, you turn a plus into, like, yeah. Sometimes people think they're doing something to you when they're doing something for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
it's just like, and then I think this was the last time that I really stopped caring about the Grammys, because you guys got nominated, and then Eric Roberson got nominated for mm-hmm. a Tale of Two, and I was like, that's almost like Sophie's Choice.
Right.
You talk about a monster of a song, like, that song... I think he's a collaborator.
Yeah, that's my brother. Yeah, man.
It's like that song. He has a gift it's like to deal with these complex situations and break them down in a simplistic manner.
Very much
like
so.
That you have too, but it's like that song and then this and then. Like India Rewind, and I didn't know she had anything out.
Yeah, it was. I mean, yeah, she won. It was a Sade cover.
Oh yeah. Yes, that's right.
She covered Pearls, which is like one of my least favorite Sade songs to begin with. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, she won, and I mean, it was what it was.
But you won our hearts.
But, yeah,
That's what it's about.
But
that's
9 on the ballot, number 1 in your heart.
Yeah, but it's like, so, you know, we talk about, and we'll shift a little bit, but I wanted to get your thoughts on, like, with music nowadays, how come some rappers, or just some artists, what do you think the benefits of, the benefits of having one producer on a project like you and Nicolay?
Yeah.
And then I think in a hip hop sense, two of my favorite releases within the last 10 or 15 years, Below the Heavens,
mm-hmm.
Blue in Exile, and then even Boy Meets World with Fat Sean.
Yeah,
it's just like those two guys, like it's just, and it's,
I mean, even if you want to go on to it, then take it to a TV parallel, you know, True Detective.
Yeah.
You know, one writer, one director for mm-hmm. the whole season, you know? I think it's something that where, first and foremost, it's not something that everybody can pull off.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of producers who you hear and you're like, man, they got jams.
Yeah.
Why ain't they never did a whole album? And it's like, well, there's a reason for that. Hmm. You know, it's very hard to shine consistently for 10 tracks all in the same setting. You know, I mean, I can take 10 Neptune songs off the radio and you'll have a monster player. I mean, so you can take 20, 30, 40 fucking Neptune songs and put them, you know, and have a monster playlist.
Yeah.
But to say, okay, Pharrell, here's, do 10 songs just by yourself. That's
different.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's something different. And I mean, I thought Girl was a good album, but you know, it certainly had its moments where his weaknesses were showing.
Well, it seems like white people are just now catching up on it, but it's just like, you listen to Nerd, and it's just like, this guy had, they had songs
for
days.
For a long time,
fantastic songs, like a hell of a catalog, and he puts out Happy, and it's like, which was supposed to be, I guess, a CeeLo record?
Yeah, it was a CeeLo reference, and then I think he was going to try to get Justin to do it or whatever. Uh-huh. But yeah, man. I mean,
and it was just like, and God bless him, that's good for him, his success.
right.
But it's just like, he's been here for a while.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's the game, though, man. Yeah. I mean, that's the game. It never comes how you think it's going to come, and it certainly never comes when you think it's going to come. I mean, you know, you would look at someone like Pharrell and think, okay, he's done, you know, Justin, he's done this person, had all these records. And then, you know, he has the biggest smash of his career at 40.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's just, you know. So yeah, man, I think for me, in terms of just, you know, with making records and, you know, what you was asking about, you know, having one producer, it takes a certain kind of cat to do that.
Okay.
And not everyone can do it. Nicolay is, you know, to me, one of the few cats I know that has real range. And, you know, he can do hip hop, he can do house, he can do jazz, he can do folk, he can do, you know, he can do whatever. But he has a way of doing it all and it doesn't sound forced. And there are a lot of producers who, you know, once you put them in a setting to where it's okay, you got to do, you know, 10 records, you know, in a row, they get exposed. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So there's very few guys who can pull off that one album, one producer thing. You really got to have a lot of talent. You got to have a lot of tricks in your bag.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, with me and Nick, you know, I've always in my career, I mean, I've worked with a lot of producers.
Yeah.
But one-on-one, I've always kind of kept my circle kind of close just because there's just very few people who can kind of keep up with my output. You know, okay. I mean, to be very honest with you. I mean, my output now, I mean, is less than it was like when I was, you know, 25. But it is very much a thing for me where like iron sharpens iron. Mm-hmm. And with Ninth, with Nick, with Zoe, you know, those are guys that they might walk. But very rarely, if ever, do they ever strike out. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know, they may walk. They yeah. may, you know, hit a single. But you can guarantee anytime one of those guys gets up to bat, nigga, we shit, at least a double, at the very yeah. least. You know what I'm saying? Somebody coming home, you know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
So with those guys, man, it's just they just produce at such a high level and are able to do it consistently. And, you know, once you get used to working with that level of consistency over and over again, it's hard to go back, you know?
Yeah.
And I think they, you know, I would hope that they feel the same way about me. You know, when they send a record to me, you know, one of the biggest compliments that I received, you know, early on in my career, it was when we were working on Murs's album, Murs's first album that Ninth did, the 316 joint.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, yeah.
And we were working on the animal record me and him did. And so Ninth was there.
I heard your style and I peeped you, nigga.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
We did that record. Yeah. And so that night in the studio, it was me, Ninth, and Ninth's wife was there, and Murs, and Scuttle was there.
Yeah.
And so it was getting kind of late. And Crisis was there because Crisis engineered it.
Yeah.
And so he was like, yo, man, his wife was getting tired or whatever. She was ready to go. He's like, yo, man, we gonna go or whatever. And Crisis was like, yo, you sure? You know what I'm saying? And Ninth was just like, he's like, oh, I know Tay got it. He's like, don't even. He's like, he's like, Tay don't. He's like, oh, I ain't worried about it. And, you know, that really meant a lot to me, you know, because he's not the type of person to just willingly give up control.
Right.
You know?
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? But, you know, he had the faith in me. He knew I would get the record done and I would make the shit pop. So,
yeah.
You know, the same faith that I have in those guys, in Ninth, in Nick, Enzo, you know, I hope they have the same faith in me that they know they can send me a record and I'm going to send it back and the shit is going to be quality.
And you guys push each other.
We totally push each other. Because it's to this point now where, again, you know, it's no, and I've said this before, you know, for us, you know, as long as we've been working, it's very much a thing where good is the enemy of great. It's not even about being bad anymore because, you know, me, Ninth, you know, Nick. So, I mean, we've been working in our craft so long to where it's pretty much, it's damn near impossible to be bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
That's true. And it doesn't come off as arrogant either because it's just sort of like you guys have your style, but you still manage. Stuff changes, but you manage to maintain your essence.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
Like, that's an F.E. album. That's Zoe. That's that foreign exchange imprint.
That's the imprint.
Like
the
brand.
Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, I mean, we've been doing it so long. It's like, I mean, I'm not going to be bad. And it's not a question of being bad. It's just being great. It's always trying to hit that greatness, trying to chase that thing.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, that's what we're going for. So, you know, I may get, you know, Ninth, Nick, I mean, they could send me 20 tracks and I might be like, okay, out of this 20, five of them I can hear like for myself.
Yeah.
And then, okay, it's another five I can hear myself writing for this person. You got three that, okay, this sounds like something for your project. And then there may be like one out of the batch that I just flat out don't like. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
There may be one.
Right.
And I mean, dude, that's just the consistency that, I mean, it's hard to find.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what keeps me going and, you know, working with like singular producers. It's just once you have a person that really pushes you and is able to hit that bar over and over and over and over and over again, that just makes you better.
And what about like that? I wanted to touch on a little early and then we'll get, I know you got the, we got, but,
oh, that's all good. Bro. That's all good.
I wanted to think like just about something I touch on a lot in the show when I have guests on is just stepping out of that comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, about when did you really start taking this seriously? Like, you got that record Next Day, which was a bonus track.
Yeah.
And it's like, what kind of hit home for me was just like, I don't know if it was just the fact, like, well, we'll start with this, because, like, Dreams, which is actually on the record,
mm-hmm.
is like, Pooh says, I had to call Food Lion, tell him I was through.
Yeah.
And I'm not no more stocking corn and all that stuff. And then that next day, like, it's just, I don't know why it has so much profundity for me. Because, like, I know Food Lion.
Right, right.
My dad used to work in a grocery store. Like, I know.
Stocking,
like,
that shit is real, yeah.
I know Food Lion, and it just, like, being, like, familiar with North Carolina and Belk.
Yo, I worked, that was my last job. That was my last real job. I worked at Belk.
So it's just something, like, that just kind of hit me hard, because it's like, I know those places. I worked in Sears. Yeah. I worked there. Like, I know what that's like. And then to just step out of that, how did you deal with that? Like, the struggle with family or with, like, your, like, maybe your parents said, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, your teacher's saying, you should be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
How did you deal with that? And what did you face coming out of that?
Man, for me, it was really just a thing where, I don't know. I mean, I chalked some of it up to just being, you know, maybe I was more lucky than good. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, you got to give some of that. And, and even more so lucky than good, maybe I was just youthfully stupid, trying to save me. You know what I mean? Like, uh-huh. I was very much, you know, I believe in the phrase, you know, God takes care of babies and fools. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And, you know, I was a young fool. I mean, just I look back on my life and it's just some of the stuff I did and I survived. It was like, dude, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah. How old were you when you walked out of that bell?
Shit. I was 23.
Okay. All right.
And
so the listening hadn't dropped
yet. The listening hadn't dropped yet.
Okay.
And my son was about to be 2. My oldest son was about to turn 2.
Okay.
And me and his mother, we were together at the time, and we had a little place, and I think she was working, but at the time, she was working, but all her money was just going to pay for babysitting.
Yeah.
That was pretty much it. And so she was just working, you know, paying for his daycare. And my job was paying for everything else.
Right, right.
And so, so it was just something about, like, just that I was supposed to come in and work a Black Friday. And, they put up the schedule and it was like, okay, Fonte, you work from 3 to Friday. And it was just like, yo, I'm not, yo, fuck this shit.
I did that at Best Buy.
Yeah, come on. And I was like, man, I'm not, nah. So I just left and I was like, yo, man, I went home with my girl. I was like, yo, I ain't going back. And she just looked at me. She was like, nigga, I know. She was like, I knew you
were. That's actually in the song.
Yeah, like, yeah. She was like, yeah. I know. I was like, yo, because by that time, like, she kind of noticed the pattern because I had quit like 3-4 other jobs previous to that.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Where I just walked off and shit. And because I don't know. I don't know, man. My mentality was just always, why should I give you 2 weeks notice if you wouldn't give me 2 weeks notice?
Because
you would come in this motherfucker, like, if you're the boss, you can come in this bitch mad because your wife didn't suck your dick before you came in and she burned the fucking chicken last night.
Yeah.
And you have a fucking attitude with me and fire me.
Right.
I don't know how I'm going to feed my family, but I got to give you 2 weeks notice. Fuck you. I'm gone.
Yeah.
Notice this shit. I ain't going to be here for 2 weeks, nigga. Notice that. So, you know, that was just my shit. I was like, I'm not calling these niggas. So, I don't know, man. So, that was just my thing.
Yeah.
And so looking back on it, it was just that, I guess, just following your heart in a lot of ways and just thinking, like, I know it's got to be something else out there for me. It's got to be something. I'm going to find a way to make it work. And, you know, and I've talked about this a lot of times. I feel that, you know, in order for you to get the things that you want, you do. It does require a leap of faith. Mm-hmm. You know, it's what's saying, you know, jump and build a parachute on the way down.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much that. But you got to jump. And And it's not until you jump that you realize how good you are at building parachutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that's,
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, oh, shit. Like, you realize, nigga, I'm MacGyver, nigga. I'm pulling out fucking goddamn, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Brother, I don't know. I mean, I'm just really, that was kind of just the drive. And so my mom, she she was just like, well, look, you know, as long as you're taking care of your son and you paying your bills, whatever.
She didn't.
Yeah, she cool. wasn't too big on it. You know, she wasn't, didn't bug me too much about it. And, you know, man, it was just, you know, just being young and just having the energy and just really just being ignorant to the ways of the world.
Yeah.
Blissfully ignorant, you know what I mean? If I had known then what I knew now, would I have been making that jump? I mean, probably not. Who's to say?
Yeah.
But that's, you know, I guess that's the phrase, you know, youth is wasting on the young.
Right.
You know, if I had the wisdom that I had now, you know, I would have taken that energy and probably could have used it into a lot more productive ways. And we'd be doing this interview on my fucking island right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? but you know, what's the Mike Tyson saying, you know, old too soon, smart too late.
Yeah.
I mean, it's,
but it's something, and then I want to wrap it up in a little bit, but we were talking about this while we were getting our chicken levels up.
Got to.
Like your collaboration with The Roots, and one thing that is inspiring to me about you is the fact that you put yourself in situations where you're rapping with these heavyweights, these guys like Black Thought and Pharrell Monch, and even a guy that's a little more unsung, Elzai. Like, so he's on the Mentor Show. Then you put him on your solo album,
yeah,
and you put him on the lead single, and you're with him on that. And it's like, how do you? I guess is the question is staying in your lane and doing what you do as an artist. How do you do that? And what is your thought process where you're like, okay, I'm going into the booth with a legend
or right.
Black Thought, just this guy that's really good. Is that just the same as you being pushed by Nicolay and Zoe?
Very much so in that way. And it's just a thing of, for me, it's just a question of, I have to just always do the best me,
yeah.
You know, and my thing is if I'm doing a record with The Roots, you know, The Roots are not calling me on a record to do a record with them to see how I can out-thought.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They're not looking for me to do that. They're looking for what I bring to the table and the stuff they've heard me do. And there's a certain voice or a certain perspective that I capture that they want to use on this record. You know, they want to capture it for one of their records. And so for me, the main thing to keep in mind when I do these kind of records is just, you know, it's very much like, okay, how do I do me on this record? When I'm doing records with Thought, you know, it's very much, I mean, he's one of my top five of all time.
Right.
And, you know, going with him, it's like, it's very much how you describe the LB dynamic. It's like, okay, Pooh is a straight ahead guy, but Fonte is the kind of fun guy.
Yeah.
So if I'm rapping with Thought, it's like, okay, I know Thought is just going to be just.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I can slow my flow down a little bit and I can dance a little bit.
Yeah.
Because he's covered the, he's going to hit every fucking accent note. Like he's going, you know, he's going to kill that. So where do I get in, you know? Because I'm not going to out-thought.
Yeah.
And he's not going to out-Fonte me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's about, like, complimenting each other. With Pharrell, it was very much a thing where he was the dancer. He was the...
Yeah, actually was.
You know,
yeah.
He was the one just...
That is true.
Send a Ranger, the Ranger, rearrange the Range Rover, Kia, PSC, via satellite with money longer than Neil's.
Yeah.
Fuck Sivery, I was in the chick's career and return to forever I'm chick career. It's like, nigga. You know what I mean? So my flow for that record was just more straight ahead. Just, you know, just straight hitting it on the 2 and the 4, you know. Because I knew I wasn't going to out Pharrell him, you know. Mine was a little more humorous.
Honestly, not because I'm in your home, but that We Go Off record, I have to run your verse back a couple times.
Oh man,
like you gotta understand from somebody that's listened to you for a long time, and somebody that who's also a performer. That's how I get up. Like you got to
get in that zone.
You gotta feel like even though it's not true, I gotta feel like I'm the best comedian.
Dog, yo, if you don't, was the saying is, who was it? Was it Mark Twain or was it? Or someone, I forgot, it was some journalism tour, somebody, yeah. But it was just basically like, you know, when you sit down to write a story, if you don't have a cocky kind of demeanor, yeah, you're in the wrong business.
Right.
You know, I'm butchering the hell out of the quote, but it was basically that.
You have to feel that you're the best.
Like, you have to feel that you're your best. You know what I mean? It's like, just like, yo, nigga, I'm about to kill this shit, whether it's rhyming, whether it's stand-up, whether it's acting.
Yeah.
You have to have that feeling, that cockiness, to get you through it, you know. You won't survive any other way.
Because, like, and the record that comes to mind is The Day. We were talking about that a little bit, just how I was wondering what you were explaining to me, like, the structure of when somebody closes out a song, what's the position where the verses are actually physically laid down on a track. Mm-hmm. And Black Thought starts that off, and it's just like, okay, well, where else is it gonna be?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and Blue, he started
you,
off.
Blue started off,
yeah. For that record, man, that was funny. Like, that record, I did a lot of records on How I Got Over, but, like, a couple of them didn't make it.
Okay.
And, like, one of them I did, and it was called Make Your Move, Make That Move, and it was kind of on some Al Green kind of soul throwback shit.
Okay.
But it didn't really fit. It was a dope record, but it didn't really fit
the album. How did I hear those?
I don't even have it. I purposely, like, I don't take shit out of the studio. Like, when I'm working with niggas like that, because if some shit gets leaked, you would know who it didn't come from.
Okay.
Because he never had it.
Sure.
Yeah, you ain't fucking up my money.
I'm not.
So, But that was it. But when we did that record, it was originally, I came in and they wanted me to do, oh God, what was it? It was, I originally did Now or Never, and then I did like this other hook on this record called Sometimes. It didn't get released. It was like this really kind of bluesy, kind of just depressing joint. It was dope as fuck though.
Yeah.
But I did that one, a hook on that one. Then I did the Make That Move record, and that one didn't make it. And so I just did the Now or Never. And then I did like another hook on something else I can't remember. But anyway, I did that one, and at the time when I did Now or Never, they were playing me records from the album, and they had The Day.
Yeah.
And just those chords, man, I was like, God, this is fucking gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And Blue was on it. I was like, oh, this shit is great. I love this fucking record. And I was like, yo, what's up with that? They was like, nah, we already got that one done. I'm like, okay. And so then on that very same day that I'm there, Amir, Questlove, he went and made the beat for which became the Doing It Again joint, the John Levin shit.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting in the studio. It's like me, Thought, Truck North, I think either Petey, no, Young Chris was in there. And just all these like spitter niggas. And Quest came in and played that shit. And you could just see everybody like, yo, like, oh my God. We was all just looking at each other like, nigga, like, yo, just please let my number get called for that shit right there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it ended up being just like a Thought solo joint, which was
right.
Dope.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Hannibal Buress came out to that on his special.
Yeah, he did. He did. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, dude. So that was it. I mean, so we left and I left, and then they called me back a few weeks later, and he was just like, yo, Rich, like, yo, you think you got another verse in you? I was like, I mean, yeah, nigga, what's up? He was like, we want you on that Day joint. I was like,
that's a hell of a song. Cause like,
yes,
I think I tweeted this. To me, that was like, I felt like you delivered at the time the verse of your life for that.
Oh man.
Cause it was just like, God, I was just like, this is a fucking love letter podcast. But you just gotta understand. But it just seems like, cause it's like, I struggle. You said like one of the lines is just like, chicken wings, sickening, living so off base.
Oh,
and
okay,
like,
okay,
sometimes
yeah.
I was like, oh God, I shouldn't be eating these chicken wings.
Well, it wasn't about chicken wings. It was,
but no, it wasn't.
But it was the Crossface chicken. It was a wrestling reference. But
I mean, it was really.
Yeah, it was like Troubles of the World. Yeah, Troubles of the World had me in a Crossface chicken wing, sickening, living so off base.
Oh,
so a Crossface chicken wing is like, it's a wrestling move
because you were a wrestler in high school.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know what I mean, so yeah, the Crossface chicken wing. Is,
well, hell, I took it.
It's like a submissive move. It's like you subdue a person with the Crossface chicken wing.
But then you say something like, well, you know why I thought about that? Because of the line, I guess, after is like, you said, I feel like I lost weight.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
I got you.
But yeah, like that, yeah, that's great. And then we'll close it out with, like, what do you, how much?
Oh, no. Are we good? I'm chilling.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about, what can you describe? Because I have a hard time of doing it. Can you describe what your definition of Black Twitter is?
My definition of Black Twitter.
Delegate from Holy Raleigh, shit. North Carolina.
Right.
Please
Black,
explain.
Black Twitter delegation.
Yeah.
Shit, man. What is Black Twitter? Yo, real rap, Black Twitter is Twitter.
Okay.
Black Twitter is Twitter.
I like that.
Like, it's Twitter would not be, like many other things and damn near everything else in the world, it would not be what it is without the flavor of Black people.
Yeah.
You know, Black people on any social network, you know, or just if you watch Black people in a social setting, you know, we cross communicate, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, if I'm sitting over here, if it's just, you know, me and my people, we chilling, and you and your perp people over there, y'all chilling, and I hear you say something like, oh, man, nigga, that Sons of Anarchy finale was some bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, nigga, that was some bullshit. Right, you remember right. that? Like, just off,
you not know. Not even having known each other.
Not even knowing each other. It's just very, it's a very communal spirit with us.
Right.
We're very community driven. Even if the community is fucked up, it's gonna be a community. You know what I'm saying? Like, we gonna have us a community.
Yeah.
It might be drugs and prostitution and shit, but nigga, we got a community. You know what I mean?
Right.
We in this shit together. And so, but versus like with, you know, with white folk on Twitter, it's not the same. They're very kind of, is, I won't say it's not a lot of interaction, you know, but it's just, it's a different experience.
Yeah.
Like, and like when I retweet some of my white friends, they're just like, dude, like you got my mentions going off. Like, it's been, it was like, bro, what did you do? I'm like, yo, that's Black Twitter. Like, it's, niggas is going, we going to comment, we going
to say something.
Yeah, we going to say something.
The thing that, which, I don't know why it's not a hashtag, but we going to get these jokes off.
We going to get them off. And we going to get these jokes off. And on Twitter, jokes are always more important than facts.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care. It's jokes over facts, nigga.
Yeah.
If it's funny, I don't care. Is if it's in fact, fuck it, it's funny. Right. You know what I mean? That's it. So, yeah.
It's just Black Twitter is just
Black Twitter. Twitter is Twitter, dude. Because all the shit that people are using in terms of, you know, I mean, even the way they're appropriating, like, I read an article, like, people using the words bae and shit and, like, hamburger helper. Like, the fucking helper account was like, I woke up like this. I'm like, these are verified brands with blue check marks that are, like, straight appropriating just nigga shit. You know what I mean?
Talk about that a little more, because when it comes into the term of the music, everybody's like, oh, Iggy Azalea's doing this. And we talked about it a little bit a couple days ago where it's just like, this has been happening for years. Why now? Why do people have to write open letters to her?
Yeah, I'm so sick of open letters. Like, nobody reads a fucking open letter.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't know why, but.
Like, she might have said some sideways shit about Popeyes and Black people when I was like, kind of fuck you a little bit.
Yeah, but I'm not going to devote time to devote, like, who are you? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't know, man. I mean, I understand people's, I understand people's reasonings, you know, behind it. And you know, wanting to educate about the culture, whatever. I mean, I get it. You know, everyone has their own thing, whatever. My thing is just, I don't know. I'm gonna just show. I ain't gonna tell.
Yeah.
Like, all for me personally, just where I'm at in my career and just in my life, I ain't writing no goddamn open letters to nobody. You know what I'm saying? I just ain't, just fuck all that. You know what I mean? Like, look, nigga, I got kids to raise. I got a teenager I'm trying to, you know, get right and shit. Like, nigga, fuck your fucking open letter. Fuck that bitch, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who fucking cares? You know what I mean? So, for me, it's like, I'm a show. I'm not going to tell. If I want to show you what a real hip-hop, a quote-unquote real hip-hop album post sound like, I'm going to make one.
It's just rap.
Yeah.
Rap's dope.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to show you. Like, you know, I'm not going to Because again, like you said, you know, it's been going on, you know, that's the one parlor trick that will never get older. It will never get old. It's never going to go out of style. You know, you can never, as a black artist, you can never out-white white people. Like, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, you can never out-white white people. Kendrick Lamar making I Love Myself will never be as big as if Macklemore would have made I Love Myself. You feel me?
Yeah.
You know, but the other side is white people can always out-black us.
Huh.
You know what I mean? Like, they can, Adele and Sam Smith and Amy Winehouse.
They're taking over, man.
And Timberlake it to the high fucking heaven.
They're taking, you know, your spot.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they can do it. But, you know, that's just the game. So the old parlor trick. And the reason why is just because, and I was even having this discussion with one of my buddies on Twitter, is like, as black artists, you're just expected to be able to do everything.
Yeah, it's
like,
true.
There's not even, it's like, of course you can dance. It's like, there's a joke on South Park where, like, Cartman was forming a band.
Yeah.
And it was like the one Token, he was like, and Token, you're on the bass. And Token was like, I can't play bass. And Cartman was like, Token, you're black, of course you can play bass. And so he just gave Token the bass and he started playing shit. He started killing shit. Uh-huh. But it's like, you know, as black people, dog, we expected to be able to do everything. Like, the magical Negro stereotype still works for a reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's niggas are just all knowing. We're all fucking magical. Like, we'll help you raise your kids. You know, we the help. We like magical slaves, nigga.
Yeah.
We fucking, we'll cure your fucking colon cancer. We green mile. We'll cure your nuts and shit. Like, we magical. Niggas is magical. So, you know what I mean? So, it's just, in order for you to stand out as a black artist, I mean, yeah. I mean, you either got to be Layla Hathaway and sing three notes at the same time, or you got to be, I'm in love with the Coco. You know, there's really no room for in between. It's, you know, so yeah, man. So now, I with all that shit, just with the appropriation and stuff, I get what people are upset about it. I'm just at a point in my life where I'm just past the point of caring.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I want to be an example or show, if I want to quote unquote teach Iggy Azalea or whatever, you know, if I want to take that on, I just make a dope fucking record. That's all the knowledge you need right there.
Yeah.
Like, really, you ain't got to go to summer school. Just get the Wu-Tang double CD, you will learn. Like that.
Yeah. And then one more thing. I keep dragging this out, but there's the TV thing.
Oh, that's cool, yeah.
Your TV, your comparisons to the television shows and the rappers and... Did you get flack from that at all?
No, I didn't. Okay. I didn't get no... I mean, you always wait. I'm like, okay, who's the sensitive rapper that's going to be mad this week? But it never happens. I mean, okay. I think cats understand it comes from a real place and, you know, it's never like on some malicious shit. It's just an observation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So...
And I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I was thinking about this. I was watching... We just... Before we cut the thing back on, they showed a trailer for Taken 3.
Look, man. That bitch needs to stay in the crib, man.
Yeah.
Like, I ain't gonna lie. Like, if my daughter got... If this is the third time, I'm just like, nigga, you can take her. Like, you got it. Like, it's, you got it. Because clearly, you have more interest in this than me. Like, your determination to take my wife is more than my determination to get my wife back. So, you won. You won. This movie gonna be like 15 minutes, nigga.
One thing that I've learned about myself, and then bringing this back to starting, like, seeing Malcolm X earlier today, like, Denzel's at a stage where he's like this old guy, he's getting those checks, but he's kicking ass.
Right.
And to me, like with The Equalizer... And then what the genre I'm liking now is the older dudes beating people's ass.
Yo, because that is where, as particularly as black men, that is where we're all headed.
To beating people's ass.
Yo, that is where, like, I was having a discussion of a friend of mine who was a lawyer. We were talking, and we were talking about the Mike Brown case Mike Brown and what's the other?
Tamir Rice.
It's so sad. I'm like, who got shot?
Who's the black kid that got
killed? Who's this week's, you know, dead black man of the week?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we were talking about that, and she was saying how, many people don't realize that, like, older black men, those are the guys who you don't want on those juries.
Right.
If you're trying to get a conviction, you know, because most black men, particularly if they're successful and older, or, you know, have some modicum of, you know, some kind of success or status or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, their mentalities was shit. It was hard for me. I came up in the hood and, you know, my shit was rough and I made it out. Why the fuck couldn't he make it out? Why the fuck was he mouthing off at the officer? Why couldn't he? You know what I mean? And I was just like, yo, that is so real because, you know, it's kind of like Chris Rock's joke about, you know, the most racist people in the world are old black men.
Hmm.
Like, it's just, niggas just done been through so much that by the time you get to that old age, all your fucks are gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very much, you know, when you saw that, I don't remember, it was a couple years ago, the girl that was on the bus and the bus driver.
Yeah.
And uppercut. Look, man, let me tell you something, bro. That nigga, I be trying to explain, I'm like, yo, you don't want it. It's a couple people in life like I don't really fuck with. I generally don't fuck with people
in general
at all. Right. I mean, I'm pretty much like, if you cool with me, I'm cool with you. If you're not cool with me, I'm still cool with you, nigga. Sure. Like, I don't give a fuck. You just keep that shit over there. You know what I mean? But people, and like, I don't fuck with the IRS because they the biggest gangsters on the planet. I don't fuck with them. I pay my taxes. And I don't fuck with old black men. I just don't fuck with old black men. I mean, I've never had problems or whatever, but, you know, when I was coming up, like, my boys, like, younger, you know, we was all young niggas, you know, you go up to the store, like, John's Curb Market, which was like a little Curb Market store where all the old drunk shit hung out at. Niggas try to go up there and want to fuck with the old drunks, and I'm like, bruh, you don't want it with them niggas, man. Them niggas have lived through too much disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, they done been through. So when he, like, if I hit you, if you square off against a 20 year old nigga, like, I'm 25 and you square off against me, okay, I'm gonna hit you with my fist. And if I have a little bit of training, I may have a little hip into it, right?
Yeah,
I'm gonna hit you with my fist and some hip. You go off against like a 60 year old black man, that nigga's gonna hit you with Vietnam.
Yeah,
goddamn, his third failed marriage. Goddamn, that child support he probably still got to pay from the young girl he messed with.
Mm-hmm.
Goddamn, that time he didn't get, he got passed over for that promotion at the plant.
Yeah.
That nigga's going to hit you with every disappointment in his life. And it is all going to come in that one punch. It's going to call every disappointment, every time he was fucked over, every time he was called nigga, every time he didn't get a job. Yeah. It is all going to culminate in that one punch for you. And you're going to absorb. It's not going to be just a punch. You're about to absorb everything. 40 years of absolute failure. You don't want it with that guy.
That's true. Yeah.
So, old black men, I'm like, look, brother, OG, I salute him. Like, yo, we good. But, yeah, you don't do that. So, I think that's why the genre appeals, like with Denzel being Equalizer, because that's pretty much where we're all headed. Yeah. It's just, we just old black men that, like, really ain't got shit to talk about. I ain't gonna be a whole lot of talking. It's just, you gonna do what I tell you to do, I'm gonna beat your ass.
Yeah.
That's pretty much life for black men after like 60. It's like,
yeah, like, it's just like, even, it's true. Like, even with that movie, have you ever seen Harry Brown. With Michael Caine?
Nah,
you gotta see.
Okay, I heard about that.
He's this old dude, older than Denzel and Liam Neeson, just like in London somewhere, and he just wreaks havoc.
Put the pause.
I think that's the blueprint.
Oh, okay.
That's the blueprint of all these things. Because like Liam Neeson, I was watching that Beyond the Tombstone, whatever the Tombstone
movie. Yeah.
It's like, you don't want to get on the phone with Liam Neeson after taking. Right. Like, I believe if he had a phone in Batman as Ra's al Ghul, Batman wouldn't have taken. If he had one in the gray,
to the wolf and shit. Right?
It's like, don't. His phone game is just ridiculous.
Yeah. I wouldn't. If Liam Neeson popped up on my phone, I wouldn't answer that shit. I'd send that shit to voicemail. Look at this nigga. He on there. You go right there.
I wouldn't
answer a Liam Neeson call. Yo, what up? Who this? This is Liam Neeson. Fonte, I have a special set of skills. I'm like, get off that bullshit, man. I ain't got your hoe, nigga. She ain't over here.
He's going to kill Forrest Whitaker, too.
Oh, damn, Forrest Whitaker's in this.
Yeah,
like, it was so, taking one was good. And taking two, they just, it was, taking two was bullshit. With the fucking, the daughter, like, it was whack.
What do you like now? What are some of your favorite movies of the year?
Whiplash. That's probably one for me. Whiplash. Definitely, shit, man. Birdman.
Yeah.
Birdman was raw. Oh, man, what else? What else did I see? The Raid 2.
I still haven't seen one.
Oh, man. Oh,
I need to see them both.
Woo.
Yeah.
I think I might have that hole over there.
Oh, shit. Sure.
That whole reel. that Raid 2. You ever seen Raid? Oh, man, that shit, yo, it's straight. Let me tell you something. The Raid, that shit is like a movie where if the movie is an hour and 40 minutes,
mm-hmm.
20 minutes of that is dialogue.
Really?
The other nigga, I was tired after that shit. That's like cardio. When I put in my fitness pal, I walk for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I did jumping jacks and nigga, I watched The Raid. Like that was
wow.
That shit is, yo, that's one of the best action movies ever.
I'm trying to think what else I think those two.
Yeah, but yeah, Birdman, Whiplash. What else? I mean, it was a couple good flicks I saw this year. What else was dope?
I'm trying to see if I can look at
my... Yeah, look, what else was dope, man?
Like, it really didn't start for me until, like, the fall. I mean, I really like Grand Budapest Hotel.
I didn't see that. I was kind of...
I was too, but I had to kill time before a show one night, and I saw it. I was like, oh. And it seems like that was, like, a big spectacle of a film, like, for Wes Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And it had all the bells and whistles, but it was still, like, a good story you could connect with. Like Moonrise Kingdom, I felt like at the time that showed his the most heart that he's ever shown. Nah,
I'm with you.
And like it was kind of like adorable and shit. But like, I have to look at. I got AMC. You guys don't have AMC down here, do you?
I got AMC.
You got AMC?
Yeah.
That Stubbs thing. They have like all the.
How the fuck is the program guy not working? Did y'all not upgrade the? I've never seen that.
Aren't they supposed to do that? Like, don't they do that usually with the like at night and they upgrade?
I don't know. I guess. I mean, last night would have been a great night to do it. It was fucking New Year's. A lot of people were out. Y'all could have did the shit then. That would have been great.
I would call them.
Yeah. Y'all starting off y'all 2015 fucked up already. Y'all know you're in a contract year. Yeah, I might want to start balling. But yeah, that joint. What else was dope? I saw like some of everything this year.
Me too. I was trying to find my ticket transit. This month. Let's not worry about it. But yeah, I think those two, like Whiplash and Birdman are the best.
Nah, those were really dope.
Yeah. Well, Fonte, man, thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
Having me in your home, getting me some chicken.
Man, hey, home's where charity starts, brother. You welcome in time. Break bread with me at my table, next time I'll do a little more healthy affair. It's,
okay, well,
you know, I'll actually grill. I'll make like some fish or something. I'll make some salmon or whatever. I'll do. You know, we'll actually have a balanced meal with like a protein and a starch and a vegetable.
Because
my kids will probably be here. Like when my kids is here. I actually got to be a dad and like cook balanced meals and shit.
Yeah.
So on the rare occasion when they not here, I just go full just fucking caveman.
I appreciate it.
Like I'm eating. I'll give me all the MSG. I want all of it.
And we'll turn on the Xbox. Is that the Xbox One?
That is the Xbox One.
Is it more your kids or more you? Or both?
Yo, really, the One is really more for my kids. I'm a PS4 dude.
Oh, you got a PS4?
Yeah.
Now,
so I've been kind of more on the PS4.
What's better?
I mean, I find for pure gaming, I like PS4
better. I didn't even know you were a gamer.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider myself. I'm also a hobbyist. Like, I'm not really about that life like that.
I'm like that too, but like, the last game I bought was, I did my first TV spot and I decided to reward myself with some Fuddruckers and like a fat guy and NBA 2K15.
Okay. And my son, he likes that.
Hard this year. It's really hard.
Yeah, the games, I think, like, for me, like, the sports games.
It hurts my self-esteem.
Yeah. Like, after Tecmo Bowl, like, once you started, like, adding more than three plays.
Yeah.
That was where I kind of tapped out. It's like, okay, I need a run, a pass, and, like, maybe a sweep. and that's about it. When it was, you could do all these audibles and L1 is the, fuck all that, bro.
And it's just like, you're actually, this is a seminal episode because this is episode 100.
Oh, wow.
And what I used to do was like, I would call the, I would call an episode by an athlete's jersey.
Okay.
So last week was, I called it episode Warren Sapp / episode Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, okay.
And I would read their Wikipedia page and stuff like that. So this is a different thing. But have you ever, I got to ask everybody that has a PS4, have you ever played The Last of Us?
Look, man, let me tell you something. Uh-oh. The Last of Us,
this might podcast have, isn't going to end. Look, hold on, we got to talk
about. Hold on, man. Look, man. Look, man. Let me tell you something, man. Look, man. That Last of Us, my nigga. Look, bruh. That, let me tell you something. Look, man. Look, I'm a grown. Okay, let's keep. I'm keep it funky with y'all.
Yeah,
and everybody.
Yeah,
look, man. Yeah. The Last of Us. I'm a 36 year old man. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm fully grown. You know, done been through some hard times and all that. Okay, mm-hmm. like all that. Done witnessed the birth of my children. Done all that. Right, all that. Okay, all that. That Last of Us, nigga. That shit was riveting. Nigga, that might have been one of the best screenplays.
Yeah.
We were sitting in here, me and my sons, because, you know, they would be watching me play. And we would be sitting in here that last scene, like, yo.
Okay, how many?
I'm not even going.
How many times did you cry?
Yo, it was a couple. It was a couple times. It was the ending. Mm-hmm. Okay. that hurt, that was okay. I don't want to spoil it for you. I've seen it, but it was the ending. It was,
it's been 2 years though.
Oh, well, go ahead.
It's been 2 years. I already spoiled it on the show before.
Okay, so. If you ain't played it yet, then fuck you, you missed it.
It's still an amazing experience.
Yeah, I could tell you the ending and you would still play it, it would still be the same.
Yeah.
But look, okay, this is where the shit got real. Okay, the shit got real. When fucking they met the black kids, the black kid, and he wanted the toy, and he was talking like, you know, I'm just scared I'm gonna turn into one of those things, whatever. And then they woke up the next morning, and he had fucking turned. I was like, and she had to kill him, and then the old boy killed him. Oh man! But then, like, the part that was like absolutely fucking horrifying to me, that battle where you had to kill David.
Yeah.
The dude that, like, he's like, well, help me with the deer. And the nigga turns out to be a fucking cannibal.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. I was a little bit shook as fuck. Mm-hmm. And, like, you have to kill him 3 times.
Yeah.
And, like, you kill him the first time. And he's like, oh, I'm going to get you. And he start crawling and shit.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this bitch shook. I was like, nigga, this nigga. Yeah. He about to, oh, shit. Bruh. Yo. And then, like, you kill him. And then afterwards, it was the Drake album.
Life comes at you fast.
And it came so fast, bro. Yeah. And so the girl, had, you know, Ellie was like so despondent and like really just kind of not, you know, just like, you know, a kid that's experienced some trauma. Like that was, The Last of Us, man, look, bro, that is that's another game I've recently beat, The Evil Within.
How is that game?
Man, it's,
is it scary?
It's, I'll put it like this. Is it scary? I mean,
like in a good way. Is it like?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's more gory than scary.
Okay.
It's just very gory. Mm-hmm. Very gory. And it's kind of like on some Resident Evil shit. The main guy that did it is the same guy that did Resident Evil.
Okay.
So this is like his latest joint. But, the thing with Last of Us, or the thing with Evil Within.
Yeah.
After playing The Last of Us, everything pales in comparison.
Dude,
That's just the hardest part. The story.
Yeah.
The Evil Within story makes no fucking sense at all. The story is all over the fucking place. It's just, what the fuck is this? And so there's no emotional weight to it. The gameplay is kind of clunky. Because it's, you know, it's like, it's, you know, third person shooter or whatever.
Not worth dropping $60.
Not 60. If you can get it for like 30, I mean, you know, it might be whatever. But yeah, bro, that joint is just, I mean, it's just kind of, Last of Us, it just is no comparison.
Well, the part that got me is when she pet the giraffe for the first time.
Look, and, I was
like, and then you get, like, it unlocks an achievement. It says, you have achieved a moment. And I was like,
that was, like, dude, that game hit me. Like, that one, Last of Us did it. And fucking, have you ever played, this is, like, the most like, yeah, this is like the most PM Dawn shit you'll ever hear on the podcast. The for PS4 Flower, have you ever played that?
No, what is that?
Dude, that shit is like, I don't know who created it, if it's just like some niggas got high one night and was just, yo.
It's like a puzzle game? Or it's like a
kind of like a puzzle. What you play as, you essentially play as a flower. And you have to, well, you have to fly around. Well, you're like a seed of pollen or whatever.
Okay.
And you have to go and pollinate all these flowers.
Okay.
So, I mean, I can show it to you. We can stop and I can show you. But it is like a gorgeous game. Mm-hmm. And the music is just so fucking...
It's like hypnotic.
Oh, man. And like you just playing and you just be sitting. It's like, yo, I've really been sitting here playing this hippie-ass fucking PM Dawn-ass game.
For 8 hours.
Yeah. And like it's so pretty and like you have to... The world is all dark and shit, and you have to light the flowers up, and the sun comes up. It's, yo, the shit is, I mean, it got rated like 4 or 5 stars and all this shit. And I asked my man, I was like, this flower shit, is it kind of, he was like, yo, it's cool, you should check it out. I'll send it to you. Send it to me. I'll show it to you. The shit is,
wow.
It's very like zen. You'll like listen to the music, and you will kind of might shed a tear. But, but I like we can have these conversations, man, because it's,
like, who knew? I did not know because you never tweet about games, and like, this even makes me feel a lot better because I always talk about the lat. Like, I've talked about this game for. I'll tell you my story. My listeners will hate me for this, but right after we hung out in last year at
Williamsburg, Hall of Music.
Brooklyn. Well, I'm thinking about last.
Oh no, you talking about when we were here and
Durham, yeah,
we
went to the spot.
Okay, gotcha.
So I was like, I took some of that check and bought The Last of Us, and I was like, all right, I wanted this game for a long time. I play it. I'm an hour and a half in, right when you get to the subway for the first time, and you meet the clickers, and I got so frustrated, I didn't play it again for like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah,
I got mad with this girl that I liked. And we stopped talking. And so I spent
I need to shoot some niggas now.
So I found out. Now, maybe you've done it. Have you played the DLC?
Left Behind? I started that and I was just kind of like, it didn't hold my attention.
You got to finish it.
Yeah, you
have to finish it. So I found out that was coming out. And I was like, all right, I dropped almost $70 on this game. I got to finish it.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm invested.
And I spent like the whole day playing this game. I didn't eat. And for a fat guy, like you. And
we nah, that's eat, real shit.
When you just eat crackers and you're just like, I'm playing this game. And it was just like, oh my God. Like that was. But
real though. Because I didn't really eat when I was playing it. Because it's like, people don't understand. Like when you in it. It's like I'm in my moment and like I can't really, I know I gotta have vitamins and nutrients and shit, but fuck that shit right now. I gotta beat this clicker. And that's just the bottom line.
And it seems like you're kind of like me in the sense, because it seems like you're a casual gamer. You're on the road
very much.
All the time.
Yeah, yeah. I don't really have time to devote to it like that.
And when you get locked in, you get locked in. So that's what that was for me. And then just coming out of that, you know, there's been people that hit me up on Twitter that said, I played this game. Thanks for the recommendation. Mm-hmm. But it was just like it's the best game I've ever played.
Nah, I'm with you. That was the most I've ever invested in like emotionally into a game. That shit was fucking hard.
Mm-hmm.
And
I died a lot.
Oh, bruh.
And they said, you know, you can sneak. Fuck and they like play, they the, fuck with you. Like, they're like, you know, you can turn it on an easier level if you want.
Oh, yeah, they be like, because like you die and then the little screen comes up. It's like, if you're too much of a pussy to beat this level, you can always go. Like, they talk shit to you. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
But, yo, the only thing I will say I didn't like, I thought they could have did better in The Last of Us than they did in DLC, was that how they had the infected and regular people in the same world.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like you could throw a fucking bottle at a clicker and it'll eat this nigga.
And you don't have to do anything.
You ain't got to do shit. So it wasn't really that on in the game.
But, you got to finish it and then talk to me after that because like...
It's a moment.
All I'm going to say... I'm not...
No, I mean, go in.
I'm going to say there's an I Got You Babe cover and I'm leaving it at that.
Oh my God. Oh wow.
And it's... And you take that for what it is until
like Sonny and Cher, I Got You Babe.
Until you play it.
Oh wow, okay.
I'm just going to leave it at.
All right, well, I'm going to keep that in mind. I got it. I mean, I started it, and I was kind of like, all right.
So you got the remastered version.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just finished.
I finished it like, yeah, a couple months ago.
Yeah,
that shit looks gorgeous on fucking PS4.
I just got that car out there, and it's like, payments.
Nah, I feel you. It's like choices to make, like transportation or Last of Us. Like,
yeah.
What do I really want?
You
know,
yeah.
I understand.
It's real out here. Well, Mr. Coleman, thank you so much.
Yeah, man. I know that added like another 20 fucking
minutes. That's fine. People are going to love this shit. Right, bro. They'll love it, man.
It gets real. But yeah, even within, that shit is just, I mean.
Don't.
It's, it's.
Okay.
Because it's very gory. I mean, I'll show it to you. I mean, I beat it and I can show you like. All this, but yeah, it's just kind of.
Did you kill everybody in that in the lab at the end? Did you shoot all the doctors?
Oh yeah, I did too. I bodied all the niggas.
Because that's Ellie was your daughter.
Yeah. I was like, it's a riveting game. It's heart wrenching. But yeah, it was because it's like, okay, do you want to? What do you do? Like, you know, stop. They're innocent. I was like, they ain't innocent, nigga. They got my daughter, nigga.
Yeah.
I killed all them niggas. And then, but I couldn't figure out like where to go. So
that was kind of hard.
When I was running, I was like, okay, where the fuck is this elevator?
Yeah.
And then you run to the elevator, and then the Lisa Bonet bitch come out and try to stop you, and you kill her. And like that, it's tear jerking because
it's epic.
You be invested. Like these are real people. Like that shit, that Last of Us it's one of the best movies you'll see ever.
Yeah.
And like how the end, like that was just so great, like how. He's lying to her, and she knows it.
Yeah,
and that'll be another 45 minutes. But yeah,
he was doing the best for her. I got an argument about that on Facebook. Like, yeah, he wasn't being selfish.
Nah, not at all. Because the thing about it is that there was no guarantee that it would have worked had they killed her. Like, there was no
shit wasn't gonna work.
Yeah, right. It's like, nah, I'm not gonna let y'all kill her for science. Like. World's already going to shit, bro.
If they do a movie, who's in that cast?
If they do the Last of Us movie, who's in the cast? Okay. Yeah, it's getting real.
I'm thinking Josh Brolin.
Dog, come on. See, this is why I fuck with real niggas. This is why I fuck with real niggas. Josh Brolin.
Who's Ellie?
Goddamn, Ellie is, who's the bride? I don't know, she may be a little too old now, but Ellen Page?
She's too old, but... They were saying that character, Sony had that game, Beyond Two Souls.
Okay.
I'm not going to, that's a... That's
I never
another,
played
that's
that
That's another 2 hours.
It's like that? It's...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes and no. I think if you're like me, which I think you are, you would like it.
Okay.
She's too old. Some little girl in Game of Thrones, I've never seen Game of Thrones.
See, I'm not Game of Thrones.
Okay,
either,
all right.
I don't know.
Have you seen Fargo?
Yes,
the girl in the series.
Oh, the one I'm thinking the movie. I haven't watched the series.
The fuck else was she in? I don't know.
But I'm with you, Josh Brolin. So I was looking at him. I'm like, yo, this nigga is Josh Brolin.
Yeah,
like that's that's him, Josh Brolin, and like maybe. Maybe Joaquin Phoenix is David. The
character. Oh, he could do that.
He looked like niggas regularly. that joint. I'm about to see. Fuck all the bullshit. What's about to happen? Is I'm about to grab the sticks. I'm about to show you. Because look, man, it's just an experience. Like you just be watching it, and it's just like they real people. It gets so real. You be chilling, and then the game it take a turn. You be like, oh my god.
Yeah.
You'll shed a tear, nigga. You'll shed a tear, and like you have to make choices, and it determines the. Oh man, it's great shit. It really is.
Joey King.
Oh
She played that last Zach Braff movie, Wish I Was Here.
Yeah, yep. She was.
She. I think she could do it.
Yeah. Okay.
She's old. She's old enough to do it. I think if you got that nucleus. And just like the stuff that I was watching when I saw Godzilla this year, like I was like, oh, they could, the way that the, like, the infected area looked, yeah, if you've seen it, like, uh-huh, it's like, they could totally do.
Yeah. What did you, I didn't see Godzilla. I heard mixed shit.
It's all right.
I heard he was only in the movie for like 15 minutes.
Yeah. The stakes, dude, what I've learned so much, the stakes are so much lower when you get stuff off a Redbox.
Listen, brother, there's a Redbox not even 100 yards up the street.
Yeah. You just walk over there?
Oh, man. I watched fucking, what was that bullshit I watched the other night? I watched, God, what was that fucking movie? It was something. It was some. And it had a good cast. Who was in it? God, who was it?
Are you talking about that shit with like Mos Def and Jennifer Aniston? Life of Crime?
Oh my God!
Because I just saw that.
It was some bullshit. I mean,
it was okay. Like it was. It's like it's
for $1.50. I'm not mad.
It's like one of those movies. Like, oh, you see the trailer. Like, oh shit, Mos Def is in this. Like,
yo, I'm seeing this. Yeah, Redbox is the king of the movies that like. Has a, like, it'll be like Robert De Niro, directed by fucking Martin Scorsese, and fucking, I don't know, Morgan Freeman. It'll have all these A-list actors, but it's like, it never
came out.
Yeah, I'm like, well, how the fuck did that happen?
It's like the music industry now. It's like, it's just like shit.
Yeah, it's like the J. Electronica albums of like, fuck, it's like.
But he's not, but that's, I think that's more J. Electronica than the music. Because it's not like he doesn't have the talent. It's just like whether he wants to
go with it.
But he's a fucking beast. But yeah, like I think you know, I don't
Yeah, but Redbox, yeah, I like, I'm good. Redbox is good for like my one of the key things I always look for in Redbox, any movie starring Clifton Powell, I'm on it. Clifton Powell, like any movie with yo, don't laugh, because
you just rented.
Doc, listen. Clifton Powell is one of the greatest black actors of our fucking time, dog. This nigga Clifton Powell, who can play, who can give you the gravitas of Ray's manager and then play Pinky? Like, from Next Friday. Like, dog, that is range. That give him a fucking Oscar. Clifton Powell, dog, you can go from playing Chauncey. Like, he's played some of my favorite characters in movie. Chauncey from Menace. He's like, yo, what? Yeah. Put me up some links, them grits, nigga. I'm hungrier than a motherfucker. Yeah, nigga, go ahead. And then, you know, yeah, this is the one we're looking for. Yeah, nigga, I can do it. Meet me back at this motherfucker about 10:30. He's like, oh, that's a stutter motherfucker. Yo, that joint, yeah, him. And then he was Pinky with this Pinkish nigga.
Yeah.
Yo, so
he's always playing like a dad, somebody's shitty stepdad.
Yeah, he was the shitty dad, and he was the deadbeat dad, and what was the movie with Jennifer Lewis? I mean,
that was every movie.
Right, yeah. She's the mom, and but it was Jennifer Lewis. She was the fucking, it was one of those black movies that was filmed all in the same weekend, like The Wood, The Brothers, The Best Man, like all those movies, they were all shot the same weekend, I'm convinced. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No one would tell me different.
I love The Wood though.
I think it was The Wood. Or was it The Brother? Or was it It was the one where Morris Chestnut was dating Gabrielle Union.
That's Vivica Fox.
That was Vivica Fox. It was the one where she was dating Gabrielle Union. He was dating Gabrielle Union. And then she found out that Gabrielle Union had went out on a date with her dad, who was Clifton Powell. I think that was The Brothers. I think that was The Brothers. They were all in the same weekend. So I know it's easy to get them mixed up. But yeah, all they did was just change wardrobe. And that was it.
Yeah.
But Clifton Powell, he was in that one. He was the dirty dad in that one. And he was getting with Jennifer Lewis and shit. And so they ended up, but that was pretty much it.
I mean, I saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and enjoyed it.
My sons went to see that. They said they liked it.
I don't see why people, you ruined my childhood, Michael Bay. It was fun.
Yeah, I heard it was cool. My boys liked it.
Yeah.
Yo, this shit here, I watch this
Casino.
Casino.
I don't see how you can do it with the commercial breaks, though.
Yeah, it's kind of just a thing where once I get into it, I'm kind of just...
You just into it?
Yeah, I'm devoted. Yeah. But I'll watch this whole every time she come on. That goddamn Sam Ross thing, that Ginger, that nigga, man. But I think it's so, what was so telling about it is like, one of my buddies has a saying, like, men get married when they have nothing else to do.
Mm.
And that is, like, so real. Like, he was the dude that, like, you know, he had arrived, he had the paper, and he was, okay, let me just get married. And he picked the worst possible fucking person to ever do that shit with.
like one of the last movies he did where it was just like, after that, I'm just going to get this money.
Yeah.
And then you didn't see any real work until you saw like Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah, yeah.
Where
it's
like you actually had some stuff nuance going on. There. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it. We did it, man. No, I think that's some of the, there's going to be some gold in there.
Yeah, bro.
Thanks, man.
Nah, ain't no thing, man.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.